studio, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio. This is the Rick Emerson Show.
We're all so exciting. What did you do this weekend?
Well, I was...
Why, hello. That's the startup sound of my brain. I'm just now activating my cerebellum. Wait, hold on. Let me activate Dennis Miller mode. That's the sound of my medulla oblongata loading up. We begin this segment. All right.
That wasn't good.
I don't know how to do... I can't do any impressions. Hey, my microphone sounds fantastic today, though. I think they are processing fairies or gnomes. Because I know the McGinley's not around right now, so there's nobody else. I can't imagine that not only Dennis Pittenberger was coming here and says, I'm going to tweak the processing. Hold on. Give me an oscilloscope. So, all right. Matt Peterson apparently spends most of his time shedding small hairs onto Tim's computer on Saturday morning. Hi, how you doing? Why, hello there. It's 2 minutes and 38 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of May in the year of our Lord, 2007. That's right. Reach right for the Purell, kids. It's not going to help. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. I'm sorry, I should explain what we're talking about here. So, of course, as you know, now we've had this discussion about various things, about all manner of grease and slime covering the keyboards, about computer cables wrapped around flammable things for no readily apparent reason for the course
grease,
of the week.
Hair and dust.
The Tim Riley's computer story. So on Saturday morning, this studio is used by the Dennis Pittenberger and Matt Peterson, who do a program that is recently re-imaged, as they say. It's now called the Miles Around's Car Show, 9 to 11 on Saturdays. And so Tim's computer gets used by someone. We're assuming it's Matt. God bless him. For a while, there was just sort of some, like those Hungry Man dinner, like some residue from that. Then for a while, it was like McDonald's residue. Then after a while, it was just like the cables just wrapped around the lighting bar. Tim came in this morning, and this is the phrase of the day from Tim Riley. He comes in this morning, and he puts his hand, and you'd think you would learn by now, when you come down on a Monday morning, that you don't put your hands down on the keyboard without looking. You sort of give everything a good dusting and a power cleaning before you begin to use it. Tim comes in today, and he puts his hands down on the computer keyboard, and then he draws them back as though he's inadvertently submerged them in some kind of slime, and he says, it's just, what did you say? It's just dust and hair everywhere. Matt's just sitting there.
It was.
Matt's just sitting there leaving his quills all over the computer keyboard. All right. Yeah, use some more Purell. That'll help. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. If you want to email today with your comments, your clarifications, your kvetches, your corrections, your 2 cents, your what have you, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. It is Monday, and welcome to day 12. Thank you for coming by. I should give you a little heads up here. I'm not actually able to see any of the calls coming in right now. Let me revise. Let me clarify. I'm looking down here at the phone. Well, this thing that sort of passes for a phone. I mean, our sort of phone box. But, you know, there's typically a piece of call screening software up on my computer screen. The call screening software isn't running yet because the computer isn't booted up yet. And have you ever done this thing where your computer doesn't want to boot up properly? It goes to some blue screen or a gray screen or a black screen or a green screen, and it just sort of hangs there. And what do? You eventually just get frustrated. You get bored, impatient. You turn off the computer, and you turn it back on again from scratch. I did that 4, 5, 6, 7 times this morning, and I just figured it was my machine. And so I just was just restarting it over and over again, figuring that would somehow work. And Tim revealed, though, that his computer is actually working really slowly as well. And Dave Zinn upstairs, the gatekeeper, made some comment to the effect that his computer is also working at a sluggish pace today. So apparently there's some problem with the network. But this doesn't really affect you, except in as much as it's going to prevent me from seeing any email at the moment. Like, I hit a reboot on my computer about 2 minutes before 11. It is now, I don't know, about 6 after. So it's taking me a good 8 minutes. It's still at the Windows logo stage. There's a little blue bar flicking by in the bottom of the screen trying to load up. So I wouldn't anticipate, like, if you send me an email right now, I'll get to it probably 20, 30 minutes. I wouldn't anticipate a real speedy read on that anytime. People are calling in. I can see calls on hold. I don't know what anybody's calling about. Not that it really matters, because either A, the call is... what we've learned over the last couple of weeks is the calls here in the opening segment of the program are either A, irrelevant, or B, mislabeled on the screen. Because Scotty is easily fooled. And so somebody will call him and say, yeah, I have a comment about the topic at hand. I have a very strongly worded opinion I would like to share about the current subject matter. And then Scotty says, all righty. And then he puts you right through. And then if somebody comes on and they just... And then they just give me some sentence ending in the word Uranus. And then they giggle and they hang up. So, you know, this opening segment probably won't be a whole lot different. 503-733-2970. I can still call in. I won't be able to see. I should make Scotty write down the calls and jog down the hallway and hand me the caller information on pieces of scrap paper.
I've done that.
Everybody's done that. That's old school radio, Scotty. That's exactly, you know, I think the first...
Yeah, let's just get the boy some Post-its and a Sharpie.
I like the way you think. I think the first two radio jobs I had, where I took calls, I think somebody had it. First radio job I had, and I've told this story, where I was downstairs in like a bomb shelter type thing. Guy had to take my call, the calls for the show upstairs, had to run down the hallway, open a door, down the stairs, hand me the Post-it notes, run back up, back down the hallway, try to get the next call. Hi, Scotty.
That's not an official Post-it note.
This isn't a Post-it note. God, you have the worst handwriting. Did you really spell ever, E-V-A?
Yes.
We're song Eva?
Yeah.
Eva.
That way it's shorthand and it's scratch paper for sure.
All right. So until the computer gets booted up, and that time is not now, please to be bringing me the call-in information on bits of paper.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Scotty J. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You want to email us today. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Here's what we're going to be talking about today. Yeah, last night's Sopranos. Boy, howdy. And I will tell you this right now. If you didn't see last night's Sopranos, that's not my fault. And I'm not going to be...
Was it good?
Oh, was it good? It was fantastic.
Oh, really?
There was some killing. There was killing right up top. I'm just going to say it right now. If you haven't watched it, it's your own fault, and I'm not going to...
Then give a disclaimer and then tell me who was killed.
Okay. I will say this. I don't...
Turn off the radio if you don't want to know.
That's the thing. I don't consider it a spoiler if it's something that's already been broadcast or if the information is already out there. In other words, it's a spoiler up until the show airs. Then it's no longer a spoiler. It's just some crap you couldn't be bothered to watch at the appropriate time. So...
Can I guess?
3, 2, 1. Do you have a guess?
Polly.
No.
Chris.
Yes. Dead.
Yeah.
Dead. Killed by Tony.
Really?
Yeah, Tony killed him. Tony killed Chris. Christopher Moltisanti. You freaking jerk. Yeah.
Damn, was he still using with that girl from the ER?
No.
Were they still seeing each other?
The ER.
Yeah, I remember her.
Juliana Margulies?
Yeah.
She was on last night. We'll talk about it here. I'll give a little recap.
Really?
So we're talking about The Sopranos last night, which was great. There's only 3 episodes left, and I don't feel this season has been particularly strong, but last night was a great episode. Last night was one of those episodes where you watch it and you realize... You do sort of forgive a lot of sins after an episode like last night. One episode like last night, man, that makes up for like 4, 5, 6 episodes where a whole lot of nothing happens, which is kind of how I feel it's been. Last week and this week, though, they are back on a roll. They keep it up like this, they're going to finish strong. So we'll talk about The Sopranos here. Speaking of which, Peter Carlin for The Oregonian is going to join us later on today. We'll talk Sopranos, we'll talk Entourage, we'll talk a whole bunch of stuff. Top five anthems of all time. As we continue to construct the Portland anthem, line by laborious, tedious, grueling, exhausting line. Top 5 anthems of all time. We will get to that later on. CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard going to be joining us from the Hill, Washington, D.C. Lisa Goddard with us. Let's see. Stories continuing the following phrases. Hey, I'm covered in feces. Paris Hilton is terrified of rampaging lesbians. Death comes to Northeast Portland. And something that I've written in a sort of scratchy gibberish that can't be discerned. Good times. 503-733-2970. We are joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. Why, hello and howdy.
Well, hello.
You got a brand new phone.
I got a brand new phone for free from the nicest Verizon guy in the world.
See, why is it that I go to Verizon, no disrespect, are they an advertiser? Well, let's act as though they are. Let's assume that they are. I'm just saying... Well, it's too late now. I've already dug myself in. I'm just saying, when I go there, nobody hands me anything free.
It was, no, you know what? I went to the store, and it was the rudest lady ever. I actually said it to her face.
I'm like, sure that it's a fine company.
Yes, it's a fine company, but this lady was really ridiculous. And my dad and I were there, and she'd finished telling me that they didn't make my phone anymore and nothing was going on. She's like, but you can look at our fine selection of phones, and you can buy one here. I said to her, I'm like, from you? No.
You can look at our fine replacement, fine series of replacement phones that are more expensive. Yeah.
And then I just went down the street to Circuit City, and they had a Verizon kiosk, and the guy was super cool and replaced it for me for free.
See, but that doesn't make any sense. Why would he do that?
I have no idea, because I was honest with him from the get-go, because you're not supposed to replace it if it's the merge.
Yeah.
And he's like, what'd you do to it? I'm like, well, I dropped it in a beer. I'm like, and I love this phone, and I don't want the new
one. And he just gave you a new one. It's like a $300 phone.
Yeah. He was really nice, and I was with my dad. He was just like an older guy, just not hitting on me or anything. Just a really nice guy.
All right. It's just, you know, when I go, let me just say this, and I will say this now. I am a Verizon customer, and I know that people like to poke fun whoever their cell phone carrier is or the utility providers, whatever. Typically speaking, I don't have any problems. I'm very happy with the actual service, the phone itself, fine. I have no problems with the product or the many services they offer. So that being said, with that caveat, let me just make this one observation. And this is not about the company as such, but just about, and I won't even say which location it is, but there is an actual Verizon store. Yeah, it's that one. You know the one I'm talking about. Yeah, it's that one.
I hate that one.
No, you don't.
I love that.
You respect them, and they're a fine company.
They're horrible little people.
May or may not advertise with us. I'm just saying this. There's this one physical Verizon store, and I got to draw this distinction because I have had to call their customer service hotline every now and again. They've been very helpful. I'm not blowing smoke. I'm just saying, I'll call the 1-800, you know, Verizon or whatever the number is, and they're great. They get to the bottom of the problem. I've had some account discrepancies. They solve it. They make me happy. They do whatever it takes. Whatever. There's this one physical Verizon, a brick and mortar store, as we say now in the internet age. I got to tell you. I mean, it really is like, it's like they went trolling through a post-lobotomy ward to staff it. I mean, I don't know where those people came from. I don't know exactly what sort of societal sludge they were sort of, they went searching through to hire some of the staff. I'm just going to make this one observation. Actually, one observation, one brief story, then we'll talk about the news that's coming up today. And I have to, just on the subject of the news, I got to say, we may have never had a heavier news day than we have today. You know, the number of things going on, a dead body in Northeast Portland. So we got, I mean, this is the number of things going on today is immense. It's massive. It's all-encompassing. Quickly, though, I'm just going to say this one tiny observation and then one quick story about that Verizon store. Then we'll talk about the news and do some other things. And we're going to take some Soprano calls in this segment, by the way, because we may have a chance to get to it later. And I want to make sure we get some of this done. So we'll do, if you got Soprano's observations, we'll do those in this segment. It's 503-733-2970. Only because I want to see Scotty run up and down the hall like some sort of a gibbering baboon handing me pieces of paper with caller information on them. Anyway, about that Verizon store. The last time I was in there, I was having a problem with my queue, and it turns out it wasn't Verizon, it was actually my queue itself. It's like, I've been on some website, got some virus, had to reboot it, whatever. I'm in there because I can't get the text messages to send. It's like, I can receive, but I can't send. They just sit in the outbox. They won't go anywhere. I go in, there's this guy, and I hand him the device. And he's looking at it, and he's not just a mouth breather. And when I say mouth breather, I don't mean that colloquially. I mean, he literally has his mouth open, and it's a lot of... I mean, full-on, like, leather-face mouth breathing as he's helping me with the phone.
Yeah.
And then his teeth jut out at all these weird... Basil Wolverton angles. I mean, they're just... His teeth, it's almost like they're just... like they're sticking straight out. And so he's got his mouth open. He's mouth breathing as he looks at my phone. And then I swear to God, this is the worst part. This is really the defining moment of the whole encounter. As he's looking at my phone, jabbing mindlessly and stupidly at the many buttons, not solving the problem at all, as he's mouth breathing, his tongue keeps coming out, and he's licking his teeth while he mouth breathes. So it's a lot of, and I know you can't really see it, but so Sarah, it's a lot of this.
I don't want
to
look.
You have to look over.
Okay.
Because it's a lot of this. I'm the guy. It's a lot of this. It's a lot of. Yeah. breathing through his mouth, mouth wide open, licking his teeth as his big, dumb fingers pound at the buttons on my phone.
Now, of course, I love Verizon Wireless as well. But when I went to get my razor, my mom and my sister had just purchased them. This was a couple of years ago. And they got them at the Verizon kiosk at Circuit City, which is my new favorite place ever. I'm going to go there. I'm never going to go to a Verizon store again, but I still love them. And went to Circuit City. They had them on sale for like $20, selling them at the Verizon store for like $300.
Yeah.
And they totally lied to me and told me that, you know, that was how much they were worth and I couldn't get it for any cheaper and blah, blah, blah. It was just a bad experience.
I do have to restress that I'm a big fan of the company. And I'm not just saying that. I really am, because I had some other cell phone providers in the past and I wasn't really happy with them. So my one final note about that Verizon store, though, is this. So I'm there, and there's the mouth-breathing tooth licker, and he's there jabbing at my phone. And this story happens, and I swear to God this is true, and this is, like, right out of The Office. I mean, you can see Steve Carell in The Office doing what I'm about to describe. So a woman comes into that store, and she's obviously got some sort of a birth defect, physical disability. She's in a wheelchair, and you can tell her body proportions are not quite right. And she's got she kind of looks like the thalidomide kids a little bit. Anyway, so she's in a wheelchair. She's obviously a business person. You can tell me, she's got like a little attaché that she's got, you know, like around her neck or whatever. And she comes in a wheelchair, and she has a problem with her phone. She's like, yeah, my address book isn't working. And so the guy's like, well, let me take a look at it. And so he's doing the same thing. He's like going through the address book, probably not solving anything. And she's kind of glancing over at her watch occasionally. And, and so I'm sort of just following, you know, the developing of the situation. And she finally looks up at him and she says, so, you know, how much longer is it going to be? Are you able to fix it? And he goes, yeah, it'll be a few minutes. And she goes, well, you know, I got this business meeting. I got to go. I'm going to be late for a meeting. So if maybe just give me back the phone. You know, the wheelchair lady says, she's like, if you can just give me back the phone, I'll come back another time. And he's like, no, I'll work on it. She said, you know, I'm really going to have to go. You know, I'm running late. I'd rather have that phone now than have to wait for it. And he gives it back to her. And she says, you know what? So I'll come back at another time. We'll make an appointment, have you look at my phone. Now, do you want me to leave my name or something? And the guy says, no, I'll remember you because of the. And he points at the wheelchair. And then he started.
Oh my God.
And then he started catches himself. And then he started catches himself. And he goes, yeah, I'll remember you because of the. I'll remember you. And everyone in the store, the best thing about it was everyone in the store simultaneously, we'd all been following and watching the conversation. We all immediately turned away and looked down at the floor. Just all of us. all look away.
The arm motion
is
the best thing.
He actually waved his hand at the wheelchair because she said, do you want me to leave my name? He said, no, I'll remember you because of the, I'll remember you. Straight out of The Office. All right. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today, ladies and gentlemen.
A madman strikes a woman in the head with a hammer at a Beaverton Fred Meyer.
Hammer?
The store contends this is an isolated incident. A cruise ship is evacuated in Alaska, and teachers stage a fake gun attack on first graders to teach them a lesson.
Now, see, I was going to book Amanda Moyer from CNN about that, but then I didn't because I think she's probably off the clock by now. She went to work at like 3 at 3 a.m. That story, though, is fantastic. I've read the broad strokes of that news story. It really is one of the best things you're going to hear all day. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Scotty's now bringing me descriptions for callers who've already hung up. Thanks so much. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. And yes, preemptively, you bastards, I'll address this now so it doesn't keep coming up throughout the day. Yes, I bicycled.
And I saw the bicycle. I didn't believe you.
You sons of bitches. Well, because I never parked the bike in here. I'm not some ghetto.
That's my parking spot. You
ghetto chick
there.
Is going to park it. I don't park my bike on my living room floor, and I don't bring it into the studio either. Nor do I park my car
mine's
on
my
lawn.
Uh-huh.
So, no, mine's back. It's back on Lacey's carpet. I'm not going to bring it in here. I'll put it back in Lacey Turner's office. So, yes, I did bicycle today. And you know what? And just so I can also address something here that's undoubtedly going to be brought up, you're just going to have to trust me when my bike is here that I didn't, like, you know,
I will have it
brought in a flatbed like I'm a white guy going to Sturgis.
I will check every day. I have to see the bike.
If the bike is here, you're just going to have to assume that I rode it. You just have to believe me. I say that I didn't have it. It like dropped in via like a helio transport or something. All right, 503-733-2970. Let me get these calls, and we got a few other things to get through here. To get through as well. But the an entourage last night. I actually made. We'll take some Sopranos calls in a minute. I got this. I made actually a list of observations about last night's Sopranos. I'm just going to say this. And again, if you're listening right now, it's not a spoiler because it already aired. But we are going to be talking about what happened last night's Sopranos, which is, it really is one of those shows that when something happens, I got to tell you, I was sitting in my office this morning. 3, 4, 5 different people walked in at various points during the morning. They stick their head in the air. Did you catch last night's Sopranos? And they didn't even wait until the end of the episode to kill Christopher. They killed him in the first, like, 3 minutes.
Really?
They're driving along.
Well, what had happened in the previous episode?
Well, because, you know, he's back on, you know, he's been drinking again, and Tony suspects he's never really gotten off drugs. And Christopher...
Tony's right.
Unbeknownst to Tony, Christopher has made a few noises about ratting out to the feds and going into the witness protection plan. That Tony didn't know about this. But Tony has always had this gut sense that something's not right with Christopher. He's never really trusted him. You can tell, you know, that he's always kind of regretted the fact, he's rued the fact that he didn't really have anybody more responsible to hand the family off to. So his gut instinct, and it didn't help that Christopher's fiance Adriana turned out to be a government stooge. So Tony's always been a little unsure about him. They're driving along. Christopher is driving in the big SUV. Tony's riding shotgun. And at one point, and the way it was filmed, it was really unclear. The way it was filmed, it looked almost like Christopher deliberately drove the SUV into the path of an oncoming car. And I don't know whether I'm the only one that saw it that way, but watching it last night, it did almost look like Christopher was trying to kill them. Because they were listening to the Departed soundtrack, and Comfortably Numb is playing. And there's that line about the child is grown, the dream is gone. And Tony looks over, and I think Christopher was actually sort of crying. He was looking kind of choked up. And Tony sort of narrows his eyes because he can't figure out why Christopher's crying. And then the next thing you know, they just show the SUV swerving into the path of some oncoming car. And it looked a little bit to me like Christopher had done it intentionally. And maybe I'm wrong, or maybe it's supposed to be intentionally vague. But then the SUV...
Wait, so Tony was in the car with him?
He was running shotgun.
Okay.
And so then the SUV whips back onto the road. Anyway, long story short, it ends up going down a hill. SUV with Christopher and Tony, and it goes down the hill, rolls like 15 times, lands at the bottom, smashed all to hell. Tony gets out of the passenger side. You know, he's all bruised up and all broken up, but he's able to get out. He sort of limps around to the driver's side. Christopher is sort of spitting up blood. He's alive, but he's spitting up blood, all messed up. And Christopher says, you know, we got to switch places in the trunk. I'll never pass the drug test. And so Tony says, well, don't worry. Tony takes out the cell phone, starts to dial 911, looks at Christopher, closes the phone, and then this is the worst moment. This is the worst thing. And then just reaches in and just pinches Christopher's nose and mouth shut with his hands. And then you just hear, this is so disgusting. And then you just hear, yeah, and then you hear Chris drowning because he's coughing up blood. And then you hear him choking on the blood. And so Tony just pinches his mouth and nose shut, and Christopher just... And Tony, it's like a long-ass 30 seconds while you're waiting for Christopher to drown in his blood. And then he's dead. And then Tony calls 911. And, of course, everybody thinks that Christopher just died as a result of the wreck. It was freaky, right? That's how the show started, with him killing Christopher. It was... Let's see, what are the notes I have about the Sopranos last night? What the hell are they doing with AJ? God, that kid just irritates me. Just irritates me, and I just get the feeling the writers have no idea what to do with that character, and they just keep moving him around like an errant chess piece, just trying to figure out something interesting to do with him. Let's see, other notes. We'll go over this with Peter Carlin as well later on. I actively despise Carmela Soprano. I'm to the point now where I openly root for bad things to happen to her, because she's just such a terrible person. She's just such an awful woman. What else? Juliana Margulies, who shows up at Christopher's funeral. God damn, she is hot.
Tony really had a thing for her.
Well, because they had a thing before she and Christopher hooked up. Mm-hmm. I wrote down Juliana Margulies equals scorching. And then, of course, because it's the Sopranos, every other episode has to have James Gandolfini. It must be in his contract that he gets to have sex with some hot chick every other episode. So this ends with him banging a hooker and eating mescaline tabs. Anyway, all right. Well, let's get these calls, and then God, it's almost the bottom of the hour already. I haven't even talked about the Hannity and Combs thing with Bernard McGurk and Al Sharpton. This Britney news, the That Thing You Do DVD. It's all very exciting. Let's see. Let's get these calls in. We'll break. We'll come back with Lisa Goddard. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, I want to tell you about this song, but I have to comment. Don't watch the Sopranos much, but The Shield, that's got to be probably one and two for the best two shows on TV by far.
The Shield,
still so friggin' good.
The Shield, hands down, in my opinion, hands down, best program on television right now.
They gotta get Emmys, every one of them.
No, it's so good. In fact, somebody sent me an email the other day about The Shield where they said that The Shield is actually so good, it kind of makes you preemptively sad because when it's over, you know that there's never really going to be anything on television like that ever again. Kind of like The Sopranos.
I hope you and Carlin talk about it a little bit today.
Oh, no, we're going to talk a lot of The Shield, yeah, because we're coming up on the end of that season, too.
Sweet. Listen, I heard a song a while back. I thought it might go on your list.
Sir.
Y'all listen to the whole song. It is Knight Rider by none other than T.W. McCall of Convoy fame.
Knight Rider?
It's a hideously bad song, but it's got kind of a thing that you just can't stop listening to it.
When you say Knight Rider, is that like the television show? Or?
No, that's the name of the song, Knight Rider.
But not with a K.
No, N-I-G-H-T Rider. It's horrible, but you just won't be able to stop
it. A horrible song by C.W. McCall. What are the odds of that? Where did you hear the song? Oh, now I'll never know. like there's a station that's going to be playing a lot of C.W. McCall. Now I'll never know where I can hear the C.W. McCall song. Tim Riley, Knight Rider by C.W. McCall. Anything? Yeah. See, now I'll never be able to hear it. Thanks. Thanks a lot for that. All right. 503-733-2970. We should probably take a break here. We'll break. We'll come back. Lisa Goddard around the corner. Later on, Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth with the new News Hour Top 5 Anthems of All Time. Oregonians Peter Carlin and all that you say there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't. Hi, hello, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Hey, Scotty, my machine is up now. I think you'll have to, you know, the frightening thing is when I realize how dependent I am on Scotty J sometimes. All right.
Thank you very much, sir.
Well, because the call screening software, I used to be a guy who knew how to do things. I was like Morgan Freeman at the Shawshank Redemption. Exactly like that. I was a man who could get you. I was a man who could do things. Now I have no idea how to do anything. You know who I blame for this? I blame unions. Because we were at Fisher, and then for about half the time we were at Entercom, and there was like these union regulations where I didn't do anything. I never ran a board. I haven't run a board since like 1996. It's been over a decade since I've done that. Because we went to a union shop, and it's like, we needed something. I need this computer monitor turned on, and there'd be like a guy who did it. Now I have no idea how to activate this this call screening software. All right, okay, you're typing to me? Okay, there you go, there it is. I mean, it turns itself on. God help me if... I never really thought I'd be using this phrase, but God help me if something happens to Scotty, I'll be completely effed.
We'd all be screwed.
I have no idea how to operate any of this crap.
He's the backbone, Rick.
He really is. He's the nerve center. He's at the bridge, the helm. He's the nucleus. Keeps the whole thing running. All right, 503-733-2970. If you want to email it, it's rick@rickemerson.com. We've got Lisa Goddard is going to be joining us from the Hill in a short while. Later on, the television critic Peter Carlin will do the top five anthems and so forth. You watch it. Now, you don't have HBO anymore.
I don't even have cable.
I wonder why you weren't really chiming in on either Sopranos or Entourage, because you no longer...
Yeah.
I'm not the only person here. Am I now the only person on the show that watches The Sopranos? Scotty, do you watch The Sopranos? You have cable. I know you do.
Yeah, she probably has every channel.
For the love of God, why don't? You don't have HBO.
You have a TV in your bathroom.
Seriously, you've got a television in your show. You just bought a new truck. It's a waste of money. Yes, a waste of money.
You know, to be honest, my friends only get HBO for six months during The Sopranos.
You know, you can't do that anymore, though.
Really?
You do that. They try. They jack you on cancellation fees now. I don't know if your friends might be grandfathered in, but I know if you try to do that now, that cable company will screw you. They will shaft you if you try to do that now. There's some hope because they called it the Sopranos syndrome, where people would be registering and then they would just they would have the cable, they'd sign up just long enough to watch The Sopranos, and then they'd cancel it. And now it's like an IRA. There's like an early cancellation penalty if you try to get out of it. Either that, or I think maybe they. It's either that, or I think like they make you prepay for a year. Or something. You have to do something now because I think, I don't think you're able to. I could be wrong about that as well. There's all kinds of questions I have today. A, I wonder if it was just me, or if Christopher was actually kind of weaving it in and out of traffic. It sort of looked to me. And see, now I'm speaking to a group of people that, no one has even seen the show. So I'll have to talk to Peter about this later. But it did look to me, as Christopher was driving the SUV last night, because he's just so unhappy, and he killed that guy last week. Christopher, like, shot that television writer, like, right in the forehead last week, which is pretty impressive, considering he was, like, squacked out of his brain on heroin at the time. So Christopher's driving down the road, and he's just, you know, and he's got, like, the dead fiancé, and he's married to the girl, you know, he's got that wife that he doesn't like, and that he's got the kid that he's all nervous about, and he's back on heroin, and he's drinking again. He's thinking about going into the witness protection program, and then Tony puts on the Departed soundtrack, and I read a lot of symbolism into that too, that he's thinking about that movie and about the DiCaprio character feeling trapped and so forth, and he's listening to Comfortably Numb, and then he's getting all sad, and then the next thing you know, because I don't think they show him. I could be wrong, and maybe I'm overanalyzing, but I don't think they show Christopher steering at the moment that the truck starts going into traffic. So maybe it's just deliberately vague. But it did look a little bit to me like he was trying to off them. And then he either lost his nerve, or he didn't do it, or the other car swerved in the wrong direction, because the other car just kept going. It didn't even stop. And then he tries to get back on the road, and I think at that point he may have just lost control. Man, it was a horrific car accident, though. They go all the way down the hill, and then that moment. And you know it's coming, too. That's the worst thing about it. When Tony walks over and he looks in the driver's side window, and then Christopher's doing that thing that always grosses me out. And I can take gore. It's not like I'm not horrified by blood or, you know, whatever. But that thing where Christopher's, you know, he's obviously got a lot of internal injuries, and he's just doing that thing of, like, spitting up the blood.
Ugh.
And that always grosses me out. It's just...
Well, Christopher is bleeding from the eyes. I saw some guy getting his ass kicked on Hawthorne once outside of that taco place on 39th and Hawthorne. And this kid...
You're all class.
Face. I know. Well, I was stuck in traffic, and I ended up having to call the cops.
Watching a guy get his ass kicked on the taco place on Hawthorne?
No, and he was, like, streaming out of both eyes blood. It was... That's grosser to me than, like, gagging and...
What going. Kind of ass-kicking could you get that would make you bleed from the eyes?
This guy was just getting punched in the face repeatedly by all these guys.
I'm
threw
sorry.
Him on the ground, and then he got up, and it looked like he was crying, but it was all his blood. It was awful.
He was crying sweet, sweet tears of blood.
Bloody tears.
That doesn't even make any sense. This sounds like a daft question, but what's even in your eyes to bleed? I mean, there's no... I don't even understand that. What's in your eyes? There's just eye goo.
There was a lot of blood, though.
There's not the... You... Okay. I guess there's just radio silence. So I'm trying to work this through in my head. All right. Well, let's find out. Ladies and gentlemen, from the Hill, let's welcome to the Rich Emerson Program, CNN radio correspondent, fashionably attired, and to win in September, Lisa Goddard. Why, hello.
Or October.
October, sorry about that.
It's all good.
What are you going to do? You a little
horse? He remembers, he's just trying to pretend.
Are you a little horse today?
I am a little bit horse today, you're right. It's been a long couple of weeks.
You know what, it just gives you sort of a raspy kind of Lauren Bacall thing going on.
I like that.
Hey, I hope that nobody, I paid a little... I know this will sound creepy. I paid a little visit to the website that you and your fiance Jason set up, but just because I wanted to make sure that the listeners hadn't engaged in any untoward behavior. So, and when I looked at everything, had been sort of kept civil. We deliberately did not put out the website on the air, but the.
Right.
But apparently it only takes like a very cursory knowledge of Google
to find it. Right, exactly. But the people who did, you know, and there's a handful of dedicated and very, very good listeners who put some cool stuff up there. Thanks to all of them. It made me feel warm and fuzzy.
Excellent. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, let's see. A couple observations. Do you watch The Sopranos?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Okay. So let's talk last night.
I love it.
As a journalist, is it your assessment that Christopher Moltisanti in the opening sequence was deliberately trying to steer into traffic? Was that suicidal behavior when he was driving into the other car?
No, I do not think so.
Okay.
I do not think that. There was a brief minute where I thought, are we trying to get from this that he was asking Tony to kill him to avoid a drug test? But, and I said, I don't think so. I don't think that's the way this is going.
No, I mean, I don't, and I just couldn't, because they're playing the Pink Floyd, and Tony looks over, and what gives it, to me, what gives it almost that feeling is that there's this second when they're driving and Tony looks over and Christopher's listening to Comfortably Numb, and it almost looked like Christopher was crying.
Yeah, you know, I think that's right. I caught that too. But then during that whole conversation, Christopher was talking about when you look into your child's eyes and how life is too short, you know, and so he, I think it seemed to be that he was like, oh, you got to embrace life. You gotta,
right.
You know, so I didn't follow from that he'd be like, you know what, I've had enough of it.
All right, I'm not trying to make you talk any more than necessary, but finally, before
no,
we...
it sounds worse than it is.
Okay, before we get to the actual news, yes. And it's best if you just don't ask why this came up. How do I put this? In your just sort of layperson's knowledge of the human body, how is it possible that you would get beaten up in such a way that you would be bleeding from the eyes? I don't think there's anything in your eyes that bleeds.
You're saying from the eyeball?
I'm saying, look, here's the thing. Let me just break it down.
I'm just, come on, cut me, Mick. You know what else I have to say?
Bam! That's it. You know what? I'm not even going to pursue the actual question. That quote gets you out. That quote just gets you out. That's like a get out of jail free card. It's for like the next three times I ask you a question, you're not quite maybe positive on the answer. It doesn't matter because of that. Okay, well let's talk actual news then, and I'll bring up the eye blood with, you know, Roop or somebody.
He seems like someone who would know.
I'm just saying, so Sarah, we were talking about something or other, and Sarah revealed that she was on Hawthorne Street here in Portland, and I'm quoting now, saw a guy getting beaten up outside a taco place. And at one point, he was being punched in the face so repeatedly that his eyes were bleeding. And I was wondering what it is inside your eyes that can even bleed. There's no blood in there.
It wasn't like a cut either. I mean, it was like gushing out of his eyes. It was running out of his eyes.
You're sure he wasn't a zombie, right?
I'm pretty sure.
There's just eye goo in there. There's no blood, I would say.
Well, there's got to be. There's blood everywhere. It's not like your eye is like some gelatinous Nerf ball.
That's the worst thing you've ever said.
Phrase of the day, kids. All right. Well, moving on from gelatinous Nerf balls. Let's talk about immigration reform, shall we? That's just the worst segue in the history of the world. I want to talk about immigration reform and then this thing with Chuck Hagel, but... The phrase I latched onto is when they say Republicans and Democrats are working on a compromise for immigration reform. And I guess of all the issues here, it does seem like maybe this is the one that Republicans and Democrats could be on the same side of. I mean, what does immigration reform mean? Is that just the number of people we allow from other countries? I mean, what exactly is so contentious about immigration? I don't really understand what the big dividing issue here is.
It's just a big, massive, it's a term that refers to a massive series of complicated issues, starting with the border and how do we control our border, going to what kinds of visas do we issue and who do we give them to, and then this idea of should we have a guest worker program, which some conservative Republicans say we shouldn't have because we don't have control of our border yet. Others say, especially those in business, say we need those migrant workers. And then it goes to the 12 million or so illegal immigrants in the country now. And what do we do about it? Do we give them a way to have a status in this country? Do we not do anything and hope that they get very frustrated and leave? I don't think anyone is saying that the United States could possibly deport those 12 million people, but it's a huge question as to what you do with them.
I mean, when you talk about a guest worker program, because there's a lot of companies that claim that we need migrant workers, when companies claim that we need migrant workers, is that a backhanded way of them just saying, look, we need people that we can pay really, really dirt low wages to?
Yeah, I think they're saying, yes, we need people that will work more cheaply.
Because if we have some sort of codified process for dealing with migrant workers, you know, I mean, look, as soon as we put something on paper about, clearly Congress isn't going to put something on paper about migrant workers saying that you can pay them $1 an hour, right? I mean, it's like they're not going to formalize some sort of sub-minimum wage.
I don't think that's what, you know, the funny thing about the minimum wage, and remember, even though House Democrats have passed, actually both the House and Senate have passed changes to the minimum wage law, that actually has not gone to the president yet. So we still have the same 5.15 minimum wage that we've had for years. So, but the problem is that's the official minimum wage. The real minimum wage for most workers is higher than that. There are not a ton of businesses still paying 515, though there's some. And among them are many agricultural businesses that need those workers at that at a lower level for a very specific period of time, not for the year round. And they're not going to offer benefits. They're not going to offer anything else. They want a lot of workers for a few months, and then they want those workers to go away and come back in a year.
Mm.
And they say that's what a migrant work population is perfect for.
All right.
But, you know, that's one side of the coin. No, others, of course, including many churches, say that those workers are being taken advantage of, and then others say this whole thing is a mess because we're not enforcing our laws. A lot, for a lot of people who are upset about this, they say the bottom line is we have laws saying that we need to know who's in this country, and we're not really doing, we're just raising maybe one finger to try and enforce them.
Well, it doesn't really seem like, I mean, look, as long as we're not punishing companies that employ illegal immigration is never going to stop. I mean, that's the thing, regardless of what one thinks about it. I mean, it's never going to stop unless the government just decides to go in and just clean house on some of these big firms that just hire. There's just a big article in one of our weekly papers here about a food processing plant here with a very large fruit company that everybody, you know, I think it was, I don't want to, was it Del Monte? Does anybody know? Was it the Willamette Week? They did this big piece about, I think it was the Del Monte Fruit Company. Anyway, they were going to some factory. You know, there's like 70% of the people there or something the guy talked to didn't have any papers and so forth. And until you just decide to start cracking skulls on the guys who own these companies, nothing's ever going to change. But, you know, no one, the real problem is that no one comes and asks me. That's the real issue here.
That is the real problem, absolutely.
Well,
you know, I've passed on your number to a lot of people over here. And it's just not taken off. But, you know, you're dead on it. And that's why the Republicans are split over this. There are Republicans who have real issues, and their main issue is border security. There are Republicans who are businessmen, and their main issue is dealing with the economy. And those two sides are conflicting on some of the issues in immigration.
Yeah. Let's talk about Chuck Hagel.
Yeah, how about it?
Yeah, from Nebraska. Is this a real corn fed? What is this corn? Does corn fed just mean fat?
No, you know, I think of it as big but not fat. I think of it as, you know, you could be a kind of, you know, you could be a some kind of offensive lineman, which some offensive linemen are. You could.
I just hear that phrase a lot, and sometimes
muscly.
I hear those about women. Something, well, she's a real corn-fed gal from,
yeah,
you know,
big boned. Yeah, they're kind of big boned. Yeah. They're more Nordic.
Yeah. Nordic.
It could be overweight. May not be. May just be muscly.
Okay.
Not petite.
She's Nordic. She's got a real Leif Erikson thing going on. Let's see. I don't even know what it's talking about. Oh, Chuck Hagel. So he's making noise about running as an independent, but that's not really going to happen, is it?
Who knows? It sounds like he's playing footsie with Michael Bloomberg. And this, of course, was on the Sunday talk shows where Hagel said that he's got a real problem with Republicans. He thinks that it's become increasingly isolationist, and that he thinks that there should be another independent presidential ticket. And he just happened to mention, oh, I had dinner with New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg the other day, and, you know, maybe the two of us could end up on a ticket. So, who knows? Who knows what kind of, how serious that is? But he put it out there on national television.
Fantastic. It's fantastic. I welcome all of these wrinkles and developments. I really do. All right. Well, I'll get to the bottom of this bleeding from the eyes business. I'll update you the next time we talk.
All right. Brilliant.
All right. Enjoy your day. Get better.
Thanks, guys.
There you go. Lisa Goddard. All right. Thank you so much. There you go. Did she say thanks, guy? Hey, guy.
She said guys.
Relax. All right. 503-733-2970. This email says, Rick, so I get up and I roll out of bed, I turn on the radio, and the first thing out of the speaker is punched in front of the taco place and bleeding from the eyes, followed by gelatinous eye goo. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Signed, Matt says, P.S., I'm a glorious bastard now. Can I have a pony? Sure. What are we doing here? This is, let's get the Sopranos calls, and then we'll talk about eye goo, and we'll, and so forth. Ken, hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, Rick, how's it going?
What you got, brother?
Hey, if you're watching the scene where they do the wreck, Christopher does reach down and is messing with the radio and looking for a different CD when he drifts into the other lane. So that's why he drifted over. He wasn't running over on purpose. He was just distracted driving there.
Okay, that is true because he was swerving around while he was down on the right, and Tony said, you know, what is it, a ballroom? Just pick a station or whatever. That's right, whatever Tony said.
So, right. And as far as bleeding from the eyes, you know, there is blood in the eyes. You know, you get bloodshot eyes. So, you know, maybe that's some vessel had burst behind the eye and was bleeding through the eye cavity, you know.
So does that
lunchtime conversation.
So I wonder if that, it's not quite lunch yet. So does that mean, so if you get punched a lot in the face, I guess, does it just pool up and just comes, seeps out around your eyeball, do you suppose?
Sure, sure, you can do that, yeah.
We should try this. We should find somebody who can just work.
Scotty.
Thank you. I didn't even finish the thought. Scotty's just the go-to. That's Ken. Scotty's just the go-to guy for all of that. Fantastic. All
right. Come on, poor Scotty.
503-733-2970.
Scotty seems like you would have some nitwit friend that would do it.
Probably for a dollar.
Uh-huh.
For a dollar and a six-pack. Yeah, Susan Reynolds chimes in. She says, I don't think he swerved on purpose. He had cocaine in the system. He did seem really twitchy. That's right, because he was all jacked up and whatnot. Let's see. Rick. This says, Rick, you're right. There's no blood in your eyes. They're hollow, and the phrase bloodshot eyes doesn't exist. Also, twins are attached by the hair. Look, there's no need to be snarky, sir. Let's see. Rick, I work for said evil cable company. I never called them evil. He says, you can add and subtract HBO or any other premium channel as often as you like for $1.99, signed long-time listener. So there you go. So I guess it's still, maybe it's up, maybe it's somewhere else that they've done that. Let's see, somebody from the satellite company saying the same thing and so forth. Finally, this, Rick, well, I'm not even going to read this. There's just some guy emailing in about the word, about the phrase mouth breather. I'll get back to it. Let's see, well, I don't even know what else to get to. We might as well just break here, because otherwise I'm just going to get off into this whole thing about that thing you do, and we'll talk about that maybe next hour.
You know what? That was on HBO this weekend. I was at my folks' house in Bremerton.
It's so great. It's just...
It is really, really good.
Fantastic. And I'll just say this. So Joni and I, Joni DeRoshi and I did the nerdiest thing this weekend. I mean, that really is saying something. So I had got the DVD, the extended, you know, the double disc DVD for that thing you do.
Did you guys dress up as characters from the movie and pretend to be them?
Yes, that's exactly what
we did.
That's
the nerdiest thing you could have done.
No, that would just be weird. But I had the double disc. I bought the extended version of that thing you do. And then so she did as well. And so on Saturday, we were both just laying around the house. She was at her house in the Coop. I was in Vancouver, or I was in Portland, and we're watching it. And then we're texting each other constantly during the film. And it's not even like we're watching the same movie on television at the same time. And plus, I had started watching it about an hour before she had. And so I would be texting her about something. And then about an hour later, she would text me about that same scene when she got to it. And so we were sending each other, like, I don't know, probably 30 or 40 text messages over the course of about 3.5 hours while we were watching the director's cut of That Thing You Do. Because I'm retarded. That's how I spend my time. Although, let me just say that, Tim Riley, did you watch the That Thing You Do DVD this weekend?
I did not, no.
Now, have you purchased it yet?
No, I have not.
Okay, see, here's the mystery. I'm trying to figure out whether this is just my DVD or whether, like, if I've gotten a bum copy somehow, or if it's just, if it's false advertising. Because you go to Amazon.com and you look up this double disc director's cut of That Thing You Do, and it purports to have many features, including a director's cut, featurettes, behind the scenes, music videos, trailers, and a commentary. Said that on Amazon.com. On my DVD, no commentary.
And you're all about the commentary.
I'm all about the commentary. That is the definitive. That is the archetypal the bonus.
Maybe you have an old version.
Well, no, it just came out. I mean, it was just released. I got the one.
Hmm.
I mean, and it's just, you know, out, brand new, deluxe, you know, deluxe Tom Hanks director's cut, blah, blah, blah. And they didn't have it at the, you know, CD Game Exchange, sold out, so I went to Fred Meyer. It's right there in the new releases. I mean, it is the brand new version that just came out, and yet there's no commentary on it.
I would return it.
The whole thing is mystifying to me. But I wonder if maybe I just got a bum copy somehow.
Probably not.
Because on the Amazon.com page, it does in fact say that there is a commentary. I can't imagine that they would say, like, there would be no reason for them to put out one version that doesn't have a commentary. Like, it doesn't cost them anymore. I mean, it's two discs anyway. The packaging is exactly the same. There'd be no reason for them to put out one version that had a commentary and one version that didn't. So, all right. Well, let's break now. We'll come back. Tim Riley and Mir, minutes from the Ministry of Truth at the AM 970 noon news hour. We'll get John around the corner. More of your phone calls later on. Peter Carlin, the top five, and more. You stay there. It's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. I honestly can't remember if I drank coffee this morning, and it's been a weird day. I I can't remember whether I had my cup of coffee today. I remember...
Your cup's been sitting in there since, like, 10 o'clock this morning.
Yeah, but I might have had coffee before that and then just left the coffee cup in there. Well, when in doubt, have more. Ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
A cruise ship hit a big rock off the Alaska coast early this morning. More than 281 people were rescued. Everybody's okay. This is the Empress of the North. The name's probably familiar because it cruises around here, as a matter of fact. This is the same ship that hit a sandbar in the Columbia near Portland in, it was last year, and it had minor damage, so I guess it's the same skipper. There are no immediate reports of injuries. Captain Blake Painter rescued several passengers after hearing the Mayday call.
The ship issued a mayday, and when they gave out their position, I realized they were only about 5 miles from us, so we headed straight to them. We were the first boat on the scene. When I got there, they were listing heavy to their starboard side. They had started launching life rafts. I came up on their port side. They started to load passengers onto us.
So wait, what did they hit?
A rock. At the southern end of the icy strait.
That's a great place to end your final day.
Miles southwest of Juneau.
Seriously.
That's the polar bears are licking their chops waiting for you to jump.
Let's see. We're going to go through Death Canal, and then we're going to go through the Despair Straits. And then we're going to go around here in the Bend of Perpetual Doom. And then a quick stop for antiques. And then we're going to, I'll pass. Thank you. No, that's what I'm going to tell you. Now, look, you can call me just a big pussy, but I'll tell you, I don't want to. This is why I don't go on ships. I don't go on cruise. Laura keeps trying to get me to go on a cruise line, like on some, you know, she's like, we're going to go on a cruise line to wherever it is.
No, you have like a year to live to go on one of those
cruise
things.
Lines.
Yeah, no, that's your last thing.
That'll be the last thing that I rack up on my credit cards. Right when they tell me that I have a tumor the size of a grapefruit inside my brain, that'll be the last thing I put on the platinum card. Yeah, I'll be back in 6 months. Just get on the ship, and then they can just kick me overboard when I'm dead. Because I know that I will be the one guy. It'll be me, and it's always me. It'll be like Jack Lemmon and the Out-of-Towners. I'll get on that boat, and I'll be like that guy in that... Remember that hideous story that happened about 87? Was that the Achille Lauro? Where they was going on a cruise, and then they hijack it, and they kick that guy in the wheelchair off the ship?
Oh, yeah, that was Achille Lauro.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, you just... Well, it's a bad way to go. You're on a cruise ship. You're just trying to have fun. You happen to be in a wheelchair and some terrorists come on board and they take you in the wheelchair and chuck you over the side into the ocean. You don't want to do that. That's a bad net. That's exactly what would happen to me.
Don't go in a wheelchair.
No.
Captain Blake said he rescued dozens of people.
We put 33 people on here. A few minutes later, another fishing boat showed up. They put a few more passengers on there. We backed away. A tugboat pulled up. We put our passengers on the tugboat since they could accommodate more.
So it hit some ice in the icy strait and a rock and ripped the side apart.
They ran into Heinous Reef. It's a small
Heinous Reef.
Intersection of icy straits and Chatham Sound. They somehow managed to bang right into it and tore the hole open.
Right now, to meet your maker rock.
I don't know, John. Where should we go on vacation? We could go to Cuba, or we could go to Spain. We could go to the icy straits where they have Heinous Rock.
Let's go there.
Jesus.
All right, yeah, don't. Sometimes, most of the time they cruise the Columbia River, not the scene of Columbia River course.
Is that the place on the map that's just covered with, it just has skulls and crossbones?
This has Native American masks and Russian artwork, including Fabergé eggs.
Native Americans don't make Fabergé eggs.
They have terrible art.
Do they?
Well, they've never...
No, that's...
They've never taken art lessons.
They don't have an art institute. Come to the Art Institute of the Sioux Nation, or whatever the hell. Well, you know, that's a relative statement. That statement isn't offensive because it's simply an observation about the relative merits of artwork, which is a wholly subjective matter.
Just because we're for CBS doesn't mean everybody's bad here. Most are. We're not.
Scotty is. Not so much us. All right, 503-733-29. Well, seriously, I mean, look, can I just make this observation? There are rocks other than turquoise. Move on, all right? You don't need to stop making things out of turquoise. That doesn't improve anybody's image. I don't know. How about a bathroom soap holder out of turquoise? Go! Get on it right now. Stop making things out of turquoise. It was ugly to begin with. It's ugly now. Mike here on the Rick Emerson Show. Why, hello there.
Yeah, hi, Rick. Hey, did you just say that Captain Blake Painter banged into Anus Reef?
No.
No.
Oh, okay.
No one banged into anything.
Well, that's not why I called anyway. He's on TV almost every day. He's on the Deadliest Catch.
Oh, the Alaskan fishing boat.
Yeah, and actually, he's on the. He was deckhand or the engineer on the crew of the Maverick. He was on this morning, in fact, and stuff. So now he's apparently on the Evening Star. I guess he's the captain of that.
Is that Deadliest Catch show any good?
Yeah, it is, actually. They run a lot of reruns now, but they have new ones once in a while, but yeah, it gets old after a while. It's the same old stuff, but they have their mishaps and all that stuff. It's interesting for a while.
Excellent.
You know?
All right. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
There you go. Much like our program. It's interesting for a while. Did he run into Anus Reef? No, he did not. Save it. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, a 56-year-old woman who was whacked over the head with a hammer at Fred Meyer in Beaverton has a condition that's been upgraded from critical to serious. This is a random attack. She was shopping at Fred Meyer yesterday when this 65-year-old guy, Eric Osterholm, comes up and starts whacking her in the head with a hammer. Fred Meyer says nothing like this has happened before, and it's a random attack. It doesn't happen every day at Freddy's. Their statement is, our company is cooperating 100% with all agencies. This has never happened before and is a highly unusual situation at Fred Meyer. But always remember,
we are your home for low value and wide variety.
Customer service remains our number one priority, said the Fred Meyer spokeswoman, Melinda Merrill.
I guess that means if they catch you being bludgeoned with a hammer in one of the aisles, they'll try to get you a compress. What? Which Fred Meyer was this?
This is Beaverton. Let's see here. Fred Meyerton at Beaverton Town Square.
Uh-huh. Crime comes to the suburbs, Scotty, in your face.
Well, this is right next to the Olive Garden, this is where I usually eat. He could have gone over to the Olive... Had he not been caught right afterwards, he could have gone over to the Olive Garden.
You know, you just when you think it can't happen where you live, Tim Riley. All right, Scotty, quit typing if I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning jokes. Just filling up the screen with hammer
so
jokes.
So apparently this guy threw the hammer to another aisle and just walked away. Now, witnesses put him up and the cops cut him right away, so he never made it to the Olive Garden. And they found the hammer. It's unclear if he brought the hammer with him or bought it at Freddy's. I guess they could scan that and find out.
It's true. Not going to be able to sell it, probably. All right, yeah, I know.
Old people are dangerous. This guy's 65.
I know.
Some young punk in Northeast. Here's an older fellow from the suburbs.
All right, just so Scotty will quit. Yes, I know, hammer.
I barely knew her.
All right, yes. So he was old, too?
Yeah, he's 65.
Did he know the woman?
No, he did not. No, this is a random attack.
Just an old person randomly hammering people in the aisles of a Fred Meyer.
Yeah.
Some strange world we're living in.
And Beaverton.
It really is. We have the weirdest news today.
So this is white on white violence, actually.
Well, you know, the line has to be drawn somewhere. John, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
What's up?
Have you ever heard of a TV program called Firefly?
Yeah, Joss Whedon, Firefly, on board the good ship Serenity.
Yeah, based on based on this show and your recommendations of Buffy, I'm going to have to go back and watch that because I never have. But if Sarah wants to see the grossest eye bleeding scene ever, it's in that.
Well, who doesn't?
Yeah, 2x2 hands of blue. She'll love it.
It's in Serenity?
Yeah, it's in the Firefly series.
Yeah,
eye gouging or bleeding or any of that stuff, I just can't handle it.
Yeah, they got this ultrasonic thing and they hold it up and the guy just gushes from his eyeballs and toes.
Gushes from his eyeballs. Fantastic. Excellent. God bless you, John.
You bet. Thank you, sir.
I know this makes me a bad geek, but I've never seen Serenity. Or Firefly, rather. Spare me your emails. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, a little break of violence to find out about Lindsay Lohan's nonstop partying waves over the weekend in the Bahamas. Lindsay landed in the Bahamas Friday, and while she wouldn't speak to reporters all weekend, she was a force on the island, nonetheless. After taking out a Janet Jackson concert Friday night, she partied at Atlantis's or a nightclub until the wee hours of the morning. She started the evening sipping water, but not for long. She was later seen with a cigarette in one hand and a bottle of Jack in the other.
Genius.
In her rooftop VIP section,
yeah.
She got very cozy with her beau, Calum Best, a hot model in the UK. The scent of marijuana wafted through the area. Best shared whatever he was smoking with the Fantastic Four star Chris Evans, who nodded and held his breath before exhaling.
Well, okay. I like the idea that, I mean, you do have to give it to that girl, that when she does something, it's with gusto. She doesn't just sip a little Cristal, doesn't have a shot. She just has like a full-on bottle of Jack Daniels clutched in one hand. I mean, really, anything worth doing is worth overdoing. So, Jerry, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Stop. Hammer time.
No, no.
The only thing that could have made that worse would have been if it had happened in Verizon.
No. Yeah, stop it. Stop it now. Too soon. Here's Tim Riley.
It is too soon. No, my camera jokes.
No.
Okay, this is totally bizarre. It comes from Tennessee, so how can we be shocked at this? From Murfreesboro, Tennessee, staff members of the Murfreesboro Elementary School staged a fake gunman attack during a school trip, telling them it was not a drill as children cried and huddled under tables. Parents of the sixth grade students at Scales Elementary were outraged about learning about the prank that occurred during a week-long trip to a state park. Assistant Principal Don Bach, who was president, said the scenario was intended as a learning lesson and only lasted a few minutes. We got together and discussed what we would have done in a real situation. During the last night of the school trip to Fall Creek Falls at the state park south of Nashville, staff members convinced the 69 students there was a gunman on the loose. The students were told to lie on the floor and hide underneath tables and keep quiet.
I'm sorry, I don't know what's going on. Hold on.
Stop.
Well,
I guess the computers are working again.
Stop.
Is there a D-loop button that could be pushed?
No, it's... Hold on. All right. I can't get my computer to turn off.
This is bad.
It's just...
I guess it worked that time.
Jesus Christ. I don't know why that happened. It just began doing that. I'm sorry, I...
We're in for quite a day here.
Well, no, Amanda, let me see if I've got the if I've got my CNN prep sheet here. I don't have the front, but yeah, Amanda Moyer was talking about it. I didn't book her, because she was already clocked off at CNN. But, yeah, so the what are these, are sixth grade kids?
Yes.
And so the teacher just decided...
They told them to lie down the floor, hide on your tables, and stay quiet. After the lights went out, about 20 kids started to cry. It was like, oh, my God, said an 11-year-old. At first, I thought I was going to die. We flipped out. A teacher told us, we just got a call. There's been a random shooting. I thought it was serious. A teacher disguised in a hooded sweatshirt, even pulled on the locked door, pretended to be a suspicious subject. Stress is not a good experience, said Alicia Graves, who sent us on the trip. These kids were crying and they were terrified. Some parents said they were upset by the staff's poor judgment. The children were in that room in the dark begging for their lives because they thought there was someone with a gun coming after them. Gales Elementary Principal Catherine Stevens held a meeting Saturday afternoon at the school after her parents called to complain. She said she was saddened by this situation and the school was handling it. She declined to say whether the staff members involved would face disciplinary action. Yes, the circumstances that occurred involved poor judgment. My hope is that we can learn from this, and in the end, it will have a positive result for growth in all of us.
Oh, my God.
Said one of the children, I think I went too far because it was too gruesome. You think a teacher wouldn't do that, but they did.
Get used to it, kid.
But they're great teachers. If the principal loses his job, I will break into tears.
They're great teachers, but they're not putting on black hoods and telling us we're all going to be shot. I love the idea. I didn't hear that part. I knew that at one point, the teacher had made all these 11-year-olds lie on the floor and said, hey, there's an armed shooter wandering through. Everybody stay quiet or you'll die. And then at one point, the teacher told the kids, this is not a drill.
Yeah. Oh.
He actually used the phrase, this
is
not a drill.
It's complete.
I didn't know that a teacher put on a hood and was trying to,
can
like...
Can we read the third one more time?
Trying to jimmy open the door. Oh, that's genius. Let's read that again at the end of the hour.
All right.
No. We'll read that story. We'll encore that story at the end of the news hour.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's fantastic. I just picture the teacher there, like that guy from Black September or whatever. a huge stocking over his head and a handgun.
Oh, it's a begging for their lives. It's a great learning experience, Krista.
I know it's wrong that we're laughing, but what are you going to do?
It's Tennessee.
It really is.
I mean, it's not like they're real people. It's Tennessee.
Oh, God.
These are not people who really count.
Fantastic. Oh, all right. Yeah, that brightens my day right up. It really does.
Right.
Nothing like a room full of weeping children to pretty put a smile on your face.
For your lives.
The teacher told us we were all going to die. And then I'm just picturing them discussing outside in the hallway, like, which teacher it is that gets to put on the hood and rattle the door while staring in the window. The shop teacher, and I'll do it. All right, here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Dallas police are searching for thousands of dollars worth of candy after a robber took off with a truck full of Skittles over the weekend. Police later caught up with the truck and the suspect, who was reportedly selling the tires. 7 pallets of Skittles remain missing.
Who would want 7 pallets of Skittles? They taste like wax.
I don't know.
When's the last time you ate Skittles?
Oh, in the 80s?
They taste like ass. You think that they're good. You think that Skittles, in your memory, they're good. They're like those little Hostess donuts. You think back on them, you're like, oh, those are fantastic. Don't give in to that craving.
Those things stain your clothes. Whatever kind of sugar that is, it doesn't come out of your clothes.
Skittles?
No, those Hostess powdered donuts.
Oh, yeah. No. That never comes off.
Is that like Gold Bond medicated foot powder on those?
Yeah.
So it's
genius. All right.
So meanwhile, let's talk about Mitt Romney, shall we? He was on 60 Minutes last night. He talked about his church, which is the Mormon church. It's part of the history of the church, and I understand that's troubling the people, said Mitt.
Got a great-great-grandfather. They were trying to build a generation out there in the desert, and so he took additional wives as he was told to do, and I must admit, I can't imagine anything more awful than polygamy.
Wait, let's run through this again. The Holocaust?
No, it's not that bad.
An asteroid killing everybody on Earth?
No.
Slavery?
No.
Apparently, polygamy. Apparently, having sex with multiple women, the worst. The worst thing ever.
Or free from Washington, a horse.
Yeah. I tried to see that this weekend. I tried to see it, and I missed
standing
it.
Room only.
No, it was. I think one of the showings, the early showings sold out, and then I tried to see it, and I missed the thing because I got the time wrong. Mm. I'm seeing it this week, though. Zoo is playing at Cinema 21.
It's part of the new spirit of the Northwest.
When you think
of Washington State.
It got really mixed reviews. Some of the reviews were just so horrified and just put off by the subject matter.
No, maybe it's mostly local interest.
Zoo is the story of Kenneth Binion, who's the guy that.
Can you imagine parents taking their kids at that, think it's a Disney film?
It's about a man and his horse. It's about a loveling relationship between a man and a stallion.
And in the poster, they're both smiling.
Have you seen the poster for it?
No.
Oh, it's disturbing. Okay, let's back up here. First of all, let's get back to Mitt Romney. I got to make my Mitt Romney observations. Do you have more sound?
I have one more piece of sound.
So let's finish this Mitt Romney thing, and then I'll talk about the zoo.
Well, most importantly, we want to know if he and the missus engage in premarital sex.
Of course not. They're Mormon.
No, I'm sorry. We haven't been into those things. The answer is no.
I'm joyless. That's Mitt Romney. His grandfather was ordered by the Lord to take multiple wives when they weren't being ordered by Brigham Young to kill defenseless men, women, and children. You can look it up.
But he's family friendly.
No? Okay. When they weren't killing innocent wagon trainers by the hundreds in the middle of a field somewhere, then lying about it to the government. Oh, what can you do? Let's see. What was I talking about?
Oh, the horse.
Of course. Nah, it didn't really work. I tried a little. That was just an alley. There was no oop there. So Zoo, which is playing at Cinema 21. A fine theater. Zoo is the story of Kenneth Pinion, who, you know, you can now be taken at Enum Claw style on the Leica show. Kenneth Pinion is a man who died of a, speaking medically now in the news hour, died of a perforated colon after engaging in untoward relations with a horse. Have I mentioned how I saw the video of the guy? You don't want to see that.
No.
That's something you can never unsee.
You saw that?
That's something you can never unsee. I didn't see the fatal encounter.
Uh-huh.
But there is a video, because
Paris Hilton style.
Oh, yeah, except you can see a lot more than you can in the Paris Hilton video.
Oh, no, I don't.
Because I've been talking about Kenneth Pinion. It is the most viewed story in the history of the Seattle Times.
It is.
Happened in Enum Claw in, like, 2002, I think. I was talking about on the air about this guy who died after having improper relations with a stallion. And somebody sends me a
video. It wasn't consensual.
Well, how do you know?
Unless
the horse can't talk. I mean, the horse, I know, I'm
working. Can they be told it to tap a certain number of times? Answer questions?
Paw the ground twice. Does this feel good? The safe word is.
Now, keep in mind, we're not knocking minorities, we're knocking horses. This is CBS.
What? He speaks. is the Equestrian Guild is going to file a complaint. Dear advertiser. So, anywho, I have been talking about this, and a guy sent me a video clip later that day. And, of course, like they always do, they labeled it like hot, you know, cheerleader action or whatever. And I'm like, all right, you know, and I click on it. And, of course, it's neither hot, I guess, unless you're into the... It's this guy and the horse. And it takes you a second. I told this story before. It takes you a second to really process it because you're not expecting it to be what it is. And I was like, well, what is... I don't know. Is that an arm? Oh, no, God! You know, and then you realize you're watching this man and the stallion, and then you just, and then it all goes black. Your whole brain just turns itself off. The playing at Cinema 21 right now is this movie Zoo, which is a documentary about the life and rupturey death of this guy, Ken Pinion, who had been getting it on with one of God's four-legged creatures. At this farm in Enumclaw. Anyway, the worst and best thing is how I had gotten the timeline wrong. And so on Friday, I had said, yes, everybody go to see this new exciting movie at Cinema 21, Air Guitar Nation. And so, which I thought was opening, but it wasn't.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering about that when I looked at the list.
It's a horse sex film. And so I wonder how many people took their kids to see Air Guitar Nation at Cinema 21, and then the lights go down, and suddenly you come up, and it's a whole lot of, you know, you know, and then it's just all bad. Just a whole lot of bad. Oh, but let's talk about the poster for this movie, Zoo, which I will be seeing this week, by the way. Because it's...
I want to see that, too.
It's fascinating. I mean, it's just... Especially because this farm was apparently well-known among that community in and around the Enumclaw area. But the poster is so creepy. The poster is... A photograph of the head of a horse, not like Godfather style, but I mean just a photograph of a horse, like from the neck up, so you just sort of see the horse, kind of in profile, sort of like a three-quarter turn. Looking
now,
at the
is
camera.
This a body devil for the horse, or is this the actual horse?
You know, they do have film of the actual horse, which is still alive. I watched the trailer, and the horse is actually still around. But the poster is a photo of the horse. So horrifying. And then your horse have, you know, there's those big black eyes. And so if you look at it and in the horse's eye, you can see the reflection of it of a nude guy. You can see the reflection of a nude white guy.
That's the poster?
Yeah. It's a picture of the horse, and then if you look at the horse's, like, where his pupil is, you can see a reflection, and the reflection is that of a nude white guy just kind of standing there.
Is the horse still alive?
Yes, I believe so.
So did it make the talk show circuit after that?
Yes. I've exhausted my horse jokes. Something about naysayers. I don't know. Just work. Take that at home and work it yourself into the appropriate pun. Shall we break?
Oh, I guess so.
That's a fine idea. Let's break now and we'll come back and... We won't revisit any of this unpleasantness. 503-733, except for the kids being told they're all going to die. We'll revisit that probably two or three times. 503-733-2970 is the Rick Emerson radio program. You stay there. Stay in 970, solid state radio.
Rumble, rumble, it's final. A black final. Soul, rock and roll, coming like a rhino. Table turned, suckers burn to learn. They can't disable the power of my label.
All right, so Rick Emerson Show, 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970 is the Ministry of Truth. Here's Tim Riley.
NBC just released its fall schedule moments ago. Guess what canceled?
Studio 60.
Correct. Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip and Jordan?
Never heard of it. I have no idea what Jordan is.
See, another critical favorite that hasn't found a big audience, Friday Night Lights, was renewed.
Really?
Law and Order will be back for its 18th season, 18 years.
Jesus.
And Medium will return, but not until January. It'll take over Sunday time slot.
I don't even think that Law and Order has any original cast members left, except for maybe, what's his name, Sam Waterston. I think that's like NYPD Blue and ER, where the entire cast is good. Jerry Orbach died like a long time. He did a long time. Mm-hmm. But I think everybody else, I think Sam Waterston might, I don't even know if he's on that show anymore. I got nothing. All I know about Law & Order comes from its crossover episodes with Homicide. That's it. That's the extent of my Law & Order. 18 years?
Yeah.
Is it the longest-running drama on television?
Gee, I don't know. It doesn't say.
I wonder if it's been on longer than ER.
Oh, ER has been around forever.
I realize now as I say this that I don't really care about the answer, so don't bother calling.
And who watches NBC?
No one.
And, of course, Heroes is their big hit. They'll also add Heroes Origins, a spinoff.
Of course they will.
With a new character every week.
I feel like a tool for never having seen Heroes.
I've never seen it either.
No, and my inbox just fills up, and I'm not trying to antagonize people. It's like the thing with the Big Lebowski, which, again, I failed to watch this weekend. I really honestly meant to watch it, and it just didn't happen. Heroes is one of those things. I don't say it to antagonize people. I just have never watched it. And every time I say that, I get a flurry of email from people who are horrified. And it's always the same. When there's something you haven't seen, people have this one stock phrase that they use over and over again. And I get the feeling that they don't even really mean it. It's just the thing that they say that they think will convince you to watch it. And the phrase is, I can't believe you, of all people, haven't watched blank. Implying that you somehow are the absolute perfect target market for it. And again, I'm not trying to be an ass about it. I feel like it's too late. It is too late for me. Heroes are only like two seasons in, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I'm hosed. I got nothing.
Then they're going to remake The Bionic Woman, this time with Michelle Ryan.
Great.
But they're out to take Lindsay Wagner and fix her up using bionics to make her look like she did in the 70s.
Oh, my God! You just gave me the greatest idea ever.
Well, that's what I'm here for.
Okay.
I throw out the ideas, and I sit back, and I just let them happen.
So throw out the ideas, and watch as I take credit for them. listen to another exciting episode of the show as Rick looks good because Tim happens to be sitting next to him. It's not even Lindsay Wagner. No, screw her. She's dead, isn't she? She's not dead.
No, she's not dead.
No, she's on Lifetime.
Really? Oh, well.
That's her old... Actress is going to die.
That is, I was going to say, that's not really the graveyard, that is the nursing home. That's the hospice of television careers. That's when the angel of death does it. He hasn't come to visit you yet, but he does sort of just look in every now and again. He just pokes his head in just to see if you're there. What was I going to say? Every day, there's one really good idea that comes out of this program. And then a lot of crap. Just a whole passel of bad things. Every day... We generate every day. We generate marriage. Every day, I don't think I did have that cup of coffee. Every day, we generate one really good idea. This is today's really good idea. I don't know why somebody hasn't done this. I'm looking in your direction, Mark Burnett. Why hasn't somebody done a real life bionic woman, man, $6 million man, whatever? That's a great idea.
I know. People don't listen to me.
They could do
it
now.
I'm a member of SAG.
You don't. You could be the guy that can fix you up.
I know.
Make you 8 feet tall and bulletproof.
They'll never call me back.
Fish that can go through a brick wall. I don't know why somebody hasn't done it. You wouldn't even need the government to do it because they're doing like face transplants in Britain and crap.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. The bionic man or woman or $6 million man as a reality show. You get somebody who's all messed up, no hands, and their face is half gone, and they've only got one lung or whatever. Some hospital. And what a great advertisement for the healthcare industry, which, let's be honest, really does need some positive PR at this point. And that Michael Moore film isn't even out yet. The healthcare industry needs something so they don't just look like blood-sucking vultures. And there you go. That's it. And it gets the geek, the Discovery Channel could do it. You have it hosted by those guys from How's It Made or Wild West Tech or one of those shows.
Oh, What Not to Wear.
Yeah. Instead of Monster
Tracy, I like her. She can host it.
You have it, or it's like a combination of Monster Garage and While You Are Out or Trading Spaces and like
It's like
and the
Car Talk and Absolutely Fabulous.
Exactly. And then it's like, Bob doesn't have a hand. And then you give Bob a bionic hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Janice has no sense of sight. You give her brand new eyes or a face transplant or, you know?
Plenty of product placement.
Robotic crotch or something. Mm-hmm. And then, bada bing. There you go. All right. I don't even know if anybody else cares about that. I think that's a brilliant idea.
I do, too.
There you go. There's our one.
But the truth is, nobody cares.
Let's just move on, then. All right. So that's that.
That's by the way, their Deal or No Deal, which is their most popular program, will air on Monday and Wednesday nights. Two nights.
I take it as a point of pride, by the way, that I've never watched Deal or No Deal, and I'm not trying to be above the average person. I'm not trying to be out of touch with my culture. I'm not trying to be smarter than other people, whatever. I'm just saying, God damn, that show seems terrible. I watched about 10 minutes of one episode once, and it just, I could feel my brain getting softer. It's just, I mean, in the presence of Howie Mandel doesn't really...
Oh, that is bad.
It doesn't really add any sort of it doesn't add a lot of whole cerebral weight to that. All right.
He hasn't been funny in about 30 years.
No, he hasn't. The last funny thing he did was when he put the glove on his head. That was his one good idea. There you go. Done. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
So let's hit all the weekend chat shows, shall we? On Meet the Press, it was John McCain, who tells us Baghdad's neighborhoods are much better now, thanks to us.
They're not safe, but they are safer than they were before. And the government has to function more effectively. And then the Iraqi military and police take over those responsibilities as we gradually withdraw. That's the recipe for success.
Did I read somewhere that the Iraqi government is taking 2 months vacation?
Yes.
Well done. They really are modeled on the American way of government, aren't they?
Where do people go on vacation in Iraq?
Tehran. I have no... Well, I mean, I really don't know. I think it might just be... I think they might just walk across...
A peacefully painted bunker.
They might walk across the street to where the Americans have built that wall. They just spend 2 weeks huddled behind the wall, free from shelling for a blissful 14 days. I mean, when I didn't talk to Lisa Goddard about this, but I'm pretty sure that this is right. And I read that story. It was like Thursday or Friday. The Iraqi government, which...
They're like our Congress. I mean, there's plenty to do here all the time.
And
we're on vacation.
I don't even know why I keep asking this, because there's really no one who's ever going
to
answer this.
We want them to be more like Americans, don't we?
I really don't even understand what the Iraqi government consists of, but apparently they've gotten enough done that they can take 2 months vacation. Who do you know that gets 2 months vacation even when things are going well?
Congress?
Things in Iraq are not going well. Splendidly.
Maybe they have to use it now because they can't carry it over.
There you go. That's why
you might not be around to carry it over next year.
Going to be too busy. There's some joke there about too busy using your sick days. That's what you're paying for, Scotty. Your tax dollars at work. Iraqi government, 2 goddamn months of vacation. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, John McCain says we're just going to have to... This is going to get him elected, this statement right here. McCain says Americans will have to live with troops in Iraq for possibly decades.
We've had troops in South Korea for 60 years, and Americans are very satisfied with that situation.
They've forgotten about it.
Americans, if you say Americans are retards, Americans don't even know we
you
have troops in Korea.
You can do anything to Americans. gas, $2, gas, $3, as long as it's playing on ESPN, you can do whatever you want to Americans.
Dad, well, that's, and you know what the funny thing is there? You went to ESPN and I was going to go back to Deal or No Deal.
Same thing.
As long as you can sit on your big Snackwell's ass and watch Howie Mandel on television.
There'll be no rioting until cable is disconnected.
Nope, there will never be a
gas can be $6 or $7.
My friend Todd had this statement. He used to say that there would never be a revolution as long as gas is under, you know, $3 or whatever. And what a naive statement that sounds like. Yeah. But really, as long as your remote control works, as long as your remote control works and you can get on and you can play Slingo on Yahoo.com or whatever, that's it. As long as you can get together with your housefrau,
we'll invade any number of countries to bring them liberty.
Doesn't matter. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Rick Emerson Show. The godlike former program director of the Rick Emerson Show, Bruce Agler. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Briefly, Gunsmoke's longest running dramatic program on television. It went 20 years.
Oh, that's true.
Okay, no, that's right.
And Law and Order is considerably longer than ER, but I'm not sure how much longer. And this is the first season for Heroes.
Okay, so I'm only one season down then.
Yeah, you actually have it only missed this year, so if they would restart at the beginning over the summer, maybe you could catch it, I don't know.
And they just keep, and here's the thing, we should talk more about this later maybe, but they keep running this, and on this station, I heard it like 15 times this morning during Dennis Miller, whether the season finale, the phenomenon, Hero, and I can't tell whether it's manufactured hype or whether it's real hype. That's the thing, like they've gotten so skilled at that. I can't tell whether there's real buzz about Heroes or just fake buzz.
It seems to be a fair amount of buzz because it does pretty good in the ratings for a science fiction show. I haven't seen it myself. It's another one I missed. You know, at the beginning of the year, it got kind of lukewarm reviews and
right.
So just didn't put it on my TiVo list. And you know, like you now, I feel like it's too late to catch up.
Yeah, no, I've gotten nothing. I don't. And the list of things that I feel like it's too late for me to get in on, you know, because you basically have to be unemployed or take 3 weeks off or something and just sit at home and power load season after season on DVD or something.
That's always the problem with these serialized shows.
Yeah.
But quickly, the reason I called was about your real-life bionic person show.
Yes.
I think you guys have a great idea, but I think you're thinking of the wrong producers. I don't think it's a Burnett type of show. Instead, I don't know what the producers are, but the guys who make Extreme Makeover Home Edition.
Right.
You know, which is a real tear-jerker, Queen for a Day kind of thing. Because our right here in Portland, they're already doing all this stuff, and I don't think anybody knows about it. And so I could see where you do it, where you have some poor kid who needs this operation, and then you take the whole family and you take them to Dornbecker or whatever, and you do this whole thing. Because when we did one of the Dornbecker radiothons a couple years ago, there was this kid. It was a young man, a teenage kid, like 15 or something. He had had some kind of cancer or something in his calf.
Mm-hmm.
They had removed his calf because it was cancerous and had to be taught. But they kept his foot. They took his foot, turned it around the other way, attached it to his knee, and then they attached this bionic metal leg to that, and used his, I guess it was his knee was bad too, see, that's why they kept the foot.
So I'm so confused about knee. What this kid looks like. I'm trying to draw,
I tell you, it's the most, it's kind of gross when you first look at him, but it is the most amazing thing. This kid
had his knee. I'm trying to draw in my head like an artist rendering of this, and it's just coming up blank. So it went.
This kid's knee, and where the kid's knee should be, is now his foot.
Okay.
But it is facing the other direction. In other words, his heel is essentially where the knee is, right?
Yeah.
Where the kneecap is now his heel. His foot goes down where your leg goes, and then attached to his foot is this bionic leg. I mean, and it's truly a bionic thing. I mean, it wasn't electronic, but I mean, it was some sort of modern metallurgical wonder of some
sort.
Why
would you even keep the foot?
Because that way you'd still have a knee. And yeah, a knee is very important.
Oh, I guess because your foot has that bendy thing to it. It bends.
Right. Yeah. You know, you had the Achilles tendons and you know all of that to replace the knee. It was the most amazing thing you've ever seen.
Messed up.
And I don't even think anybody knows that these kinds of things are. I mean, that you know, this is beyond anything in the $6 million man didn't have anything like that.
I would totally watch such a show.
Yeah, so you could imagine that. You take some poor crying family and you take them all expenses paid to you know, the Mayo Clinic or Dornbecker Children's Hospital and remake their lives. I mean, this would be a great show.
But you really ought to, but see, here's the other thing.
It's a great promotion, too.
Take it one step. Yeah, totally. The
Scissor Riddles.
Can we copyright this immediately?
I'm telling you, but you see, here's the thing. You take it one step further, though, where rather than just taking this kid's foot and making it his knee and turning it around and giving him some iron protrusion for a leg, here's the other thing. You take some guy, you have part of it done here, and then you get the rest of it done in, like, the Caribbean or someplace where life is cheap. So some guy missing a hand, instead of just a hand, he has a hand that, like, can shoot across the room on a cable like a grappling hook to grab stuff, and then he can reel it back in. Or a hand that can, like, shoot, a hand that, like, has a cigarette lighter sort of built into it. So, you know, he can sort of shoot, like, a limited amount of flame out of one hand. You can totally do that. There's no reason you couldn't do that right now.
Well, yeah, perhaps we have two parallel programs here.
Could you?
Have the sort of Extreme Makeover Addams Family Edition, it sounds like.
Excellent. There you go. Thank you. Bruce Agler, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic. That's a great idea. You know it is. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, gasoline prices have risen more than 60 cents in the home state of Connecticut for Senator Joe Lieberman. Joe, what can be done about this whole thing anyway?
I just feel so deeply that if we pulled out of Iraq now, it would be a disaster for our country. I know it would be for the Iraqis. I believe it would be for the Middle East.
And gas prices as well. So he has a few tips for you.
I just feel so deeply that if we pulled out of Iraq, as the price of gas goes up because of what foreign countries are doing to manipulate the market and the oil companies are not helping, the one answer we know will help us is that we use less gas to move us the same distance.
Whatever.
That's good advice.
I don't even know what he was talking about there. Yes, it's all the fault of foreign countries. At no point do American oil companies bear any responsibility for that.
No.
So it's good that they're
looking after our best interests.
Yeah, gas is only 40 cents in Iraq, though. That's good. Fantastic. Glad the Iraqis have cheap gas.
Well, people don't care about the gas prices here.
Well, and where are you going to drive to in Iraq, really? I mean, seriously, one bombed out hole in the ground is pretty much what do? Your neighbors got killed?
Can you imagine waiting for AAA to show up? I got a flat tire. How did that happen?
No. AAA, there's... No, I see that. I don't even know. There was no joke there. I just assumed that by the time I said the AAA in Iraq is, that the rest of the bottom part of my brain would come up with... The top half of my brain would do the setup, and the bottom part would supply me with a punchline. And it didn't come together. Allah, Akbar, da-da-da. No, see, that's not funny. Here's Tim Riley.
Let's talk about Barack Obama. He was on ABC's This Week, and he said what he would do... During a 9/11-style attack on the U.S., should there be one?
Make sure that the emergency response was appropriate and the people were safe. The second thing I'd do is make sure that we weren't going to have another attack and that we had adequate intelligence to make sure that that was prevented. The third thing I would do is to find out who had perpetrated the crime, and then I would attack.
That's the wrong answer. That answer will never get you elected in this country. What did Hillary say? Do we have what Hillary said?
No. But I did find an interesting sidelight to the Hillary story. This means if she gets elected again, Chelsea will once again become first daughter.
Is that what they call her?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and the thing
is, she'll be poking her head out from underneath Hillary's desk if she moves back to the White House.
The difference between now and then is then she looked like some sort of hideous rolled doll illustration, and now she looks all hot. So she really has become just, I mean, maybe it's trick photography or something. Mm. Maybe they're photoshopping her because she belongs to a powerful family. I don't think so. I think she's become pretty hot. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I don't think I am. I think she's, remember when she was just, she just looked, I mean... Let's just be honest. There was a time when Chelsea Clinton looked a little frightening. Like if you woke back in around, 93, like if you'd just been laying in bed at night and if you'd woken up and seen Chelsea Clinton looking down at you, I mean, that's...
Like her hand was attached to her knee.
What was that? And then they took it, they turned his knee around and his leg became his face. And I would completely watch back on this real life $6 million man thing. And then I'll talk about Barack Obama for a second. I don't even know that that's illegal. Like, if you go to some other country, and, like, you got a bum hand, they take your bum hand off, and they replace it with a sort of rocket-propelled grappling hook. I don't think that even violates any law. I mean, really, I don't even know that it violates any law here in America. I mean, just look, I don't have a leg, so instead of this leg, this leg is going to be a pogo stick that has a phone attached to it. I don't know why they don't do stuff like that right now. So I promise you right now, me and everybody else in this audience will watch such a show if you launch it. Real life six, but it can't be, you know, here's the other thing. They ought to be doing, didn't Barbara Feldon have a telephone installed in her thumb?
Oh, I don't remember that.
Max Smart had the phone in his shoe. Everybody remembers that.
Yes.
Boy,
dial phone.
Boy, man, what a weird, you look back at some of those old programs and how just off the mark they were.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, they were very prescient, but in other ways, they were just so off the mark in terms of what they thought future technology would be, that it was so advanced that he would have a phone in his shoe, and I guess you can buy that because it's like a cell phone. You know, you can buy that they thought that, but that they still somehow thought it would be a rotary phone. Just the weirdest thing. But I'm pretty sure that Agent 99, Get Smart, Barbara Feldon, had a phone in her thumb because I think she had a fake thumb. Maybe I'm making this up, but I don't think so. I think on Get Smart, Barbara Feldon's, one of her thumbs wasn't real, and she lifted up her thumbnail, and there was a tiny little dial there, and she could dial the phone. And then she spoke into the end of the thumb, and it was a phone.
I don't remember that.
Would you get that right now? Let me ask you this, Tim Riley.
Yes.
If you go to the doctor, and the doctor's looking at your eyes, or he's inspecting your ears or whatever, and he says, by the way, would you like to have one of your teeth turned into a speaker and microphone for a cell phone?
Okay.
So so all you would have to do, so like maybe you carry around a little thing that you dial with,
yeah.
But you have like a permanent Bluetooth thing. You just, and instead of calling it Bluetooth, you call it something else tooth. Something.
Snaggle tooth.
And it's an actual tooth, and so your cell phone speaker and microphone are permanently inside your mouth, attached to your jawbone.
But that would be bad because accidentally you dial someone and they hear you chewing.
For like an hour or so?
I don't know who it is.
Bob?
No, it's not Bob. Ted? All right. Is there somebody calling about Get Smart? Okay, well, let's take this. This is sort of like that. Bob, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi there. Hey, I saw on TV one time, I don't know if it was Ripley's Believe It or Not or one of those weird shows, some guy had his right arm mangled and his left hand was okay, or vice versa. Anyway, doctors put his left hand on his right arm because one arm was good and one arm was bad. So it was, but it's pretty weird, but the guy was functional when he lived, so.
So wait, let me understand. So he mangled his right hand.
I believe so.
But then his left arm wasn't any good?
Yeah, but his left hand was good.
Oh,
so
I see.
Basically, they took the good arm, the good hand, put it on the good arm.
And then they merged.
So it was pretty weird looking. Guy said he had to learn how to hold his coffee cup different, but, you know, it was okay.
Fantastic. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
There you go. Excellent. Genius. Back on Barack real quickly before we move on. That's the wrong answer. When they asked Barack what he acted, his first thing is, I would make sure the emergency response team was in place. That's probably the right answer in terms of what you really ought to do in the real world. But the American electorate, that's going to get, you know, the first answer is going to be, I would nuke whoever it was. You've got to say that. I would immediately bomb the perpetrators. That's what you have to say to get elected. I'll guarantee you that Hillary said that. I don't know what she said. Was this in a debate?
No, this is just a television appearance.
I'll guarantee you. You ask Hillary Clinton, what would you do in the event of another 9/11? The first thing out of her mouth is, I will destroy whoever did it.
And you know she would.
And you know she would. She would have, first, as soon as she saw a missile plume, you know, missile trail in the air, she'd be on that red phone ordering the extermination of every other planet, every other country on the planet. Hillary, she would, I'll guarantee you that'd be the first thing out of her mouth. All right, here's Jim Riley.
Meanwhile, Rudy Giuliani is contradicting a report from a director of the Emergency Management Warning Team who told him not to place the city's emergency response center at the World Trade Center, which is where it was. He says he put it there in 1997 because of a recommendation from a director.
And the reason that that site made sense was it was also the location of the Customs Service, the Secret Service, and a number of the federal agencies, some of which I'm not even sure I can mention at this date, that we had to be in contact with.
You know, he can't be elected president because I don't want to have to have a spit screen or whatever erected on a podium every time he goes to the office.
That is true.
Yeah.
He said the World Trade Center wasn't the only place that had a command center.
We also had backup centers at the police department in Brooklyn. We had another backup center, and we had a virtual command center.
Meanwhile, a 10-month-old boy has an Illinois-issued firearms owner's card. His dad, a columnist, says it's because the boy got the gun handed down to him.
It all kind of stems from my father, who's an avid trap shooter, and he got my son a shotgun within the first week that he was born. Sort of an heirloom type thing. Now, obviously, we're not hanging it above his crib or anything.
There's one problem he had with signing the card.
You know, at 10 months old, he can't quite sign his name yet, so I just put a pen in his hand. He made a scribble in the appropriate box, and that became superimposed at the bottom of the card.
Kids and their firearms. Hey, do we want to read that story one more time?
I suppose so.
Let's end this hour with the best story you're going to hear all day. This is from Tennessee.
Murfreesboro.
Life is cheap.
Staff members of our Murfreesboro Elementary School staged a fake gunman attack during a school trip, telling them it was not a drill as children cried and hit under tables. Parents of the sixth grade students at Scales Elementary were outraged to learn about the prank. Assistant Principal Don Barach, who was present, said the scenario was intended as a learning experience. We got together and discussed what we would do in a real situation. During the last night of a school trip to Falls Creek, that's a state park southeast of Nashville, staff members convinced 69 kids that there was a gunman on the loose. The students were told to lie or hide underneath tables and stay quiet. After the lights went out, about 20 kids started to cry. One of them, who is 11-year-old Shay Naylor, said, "It was like, my God, at first I thought I was going to die. We flipped out. A teacher told us, we just got a call, there's been a random shooting. I freaked out, I thought it was serious." A teacher, disguised in a hooded sweatshirt, even pulled on a locked door and pretended to be a suspicious subject. "This was not a good experience," said Alicia Grace, who said was on the trip. "The kids are crying and they were terrified." Some parents, they were upset by the staff's poor judgment. The children were left in a room in the dark, begging for their lives because they thought somebody with a gun was after them.
Jesus, God.
Well, The principal, Catherine Stevens, held an emergency meeting Saturday afternoon. She says she was saddened by the situation, that the school was handling it. She declined to say whether the staff members involved would face disciplinary action. The circumstance that occurred involved poor judgment. My hope is that we can all learn from this, and at the end, it'll have a positive result of growth for all of us. It went too far because it was too gruesome, said the student. You'd think a teacher wouldn't do that, but they did. They're great teachers, by the way. The assistant principal loses his job, I'll break into tears.
Don't kill me. Oh, that's great. You know, if I was one of these kids, these kids, man, you got to talk about a free ride for the rest of you. However long they're at that school, every time that teacher goes to discipline them, just starts to cry and go, don't shoot me. That's it. That's, man, you're going to get, you think anybody at that school is going to get anything less than an A for the rest of the time that they're there? Ugh. Fantastic. Well done. You got to wonder at what point that originated, because it's not just one teacher, right? That was several.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one.
Well, they're accompanying 60 kids.
I mean, it's one teacher to pretend to be the gunman, one teacher to shout, you're all going to die, one teacher to hide under the desk with the children. I mean, this isn't one, like one lone crackpot. This is many, many teachers who somehow all got together in a meeting over crullers and decaf and thought this was a fantastic idea. And I do share the question that the emailer had earlier about, like, how it is they segued from rattling on the door, pretending to be a gunman and screaming at the children that they were all going to be shot to death into, like, let's all put our heads down and have a nap.
Yeah. Oh, my God, I thought I was going to die.
Look out.
Good times.
Okay. It's 503-733-2970. Let's see. What do we got ahead? Well, we got the Peter Carlin coming up from the Oregonian. Top five anthems of all time. More from Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. I got a big old stack of news. Just, have we even talked about that dead body in Northeast Portland?
No, there have been too many others.
It's true. Do you have the story that I'm talking about?
I don't, because I know that you have it.
Okay, it's right here. And there's a connection to the Rick Emerson show as well. So we'll do that. What else? Paris Hilton news. There's all kinds of crap. All right, you stay there. Back after this. It's the Rick Emerson show. Don't go anywhere.
Mark Evans, Mark Brothers, gonna be a victim of his own circumstance. Sabotage, still suck, rock, and rude. In the life of a fool, like I said before, the living low. Life, take your time. You'll go. Put your hand on a thing to fear. Brother to brother, not another is sincere. Teach a man how to be a father. To never tell his woman he can't bother. You see?
Hi, hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, we have today's top five anthems of all time. Top five anthems of all time. Peter Carlin for the Oregonian. We're going to talk about all things Sopranos, Entourage. Entourage was great last night. I will say this. Last night, God, Jeremy Piven is just a genius, and it's not just the way that character is written, it's just some of the little things he throws in, and I don't know to what extent they're ad-libbed, or to what extent that they sort of work their stuff out in rehearsal, but there's a moment last night, and it's just a tiny little moment. I mean, it's easy to latch onto the sort of hideously offensive things he says that are sort of funny in a really over-the-top kind of a way. Those are all great, but there's just tiny little sort of little flourishes that guy brings to the character that are just great. And it's one of the funniest things he's ever done last night, which is he's on the phone with this guy, Joe Ross or Joe Michaels or whatever the guy's name is, the guy who owns this movie, Medi-Ian, that Vince wants to make. And so Vince and Eric are haggling because they're trying to buy the film to make it themselves, and it's got to go through Ari, and Ari's trying to get the guy to sell the film to Vince. Anyway, so there's this scene where Ari is on the phone in his office, and he's haggling with this guy, whoever the guy is. This is a producer guy. And the producer guy is just, you know, is being really intractable about it. He's like, well, Ari, I just don't know. And Ari's like, come on. You know, Vinny wants the movie. He wants the project. He lives it. You got to sell it to him. And the guy's like, well, I don't know. I'll call you back. And I'm not going to do this justice. You'll have to watch it. But the guy hangs up on Ari. And Ari like slams, it's like a threefer. He yanks out his Bluetooth earpiece, slams down the phone, and then he's got this phone that's sort of hooked up to a little computer display screen that sort of sits up. It's like a little, it's like a miniature flat panel monitor for your PC. It's like a little miniature version of your computer monitor. He yanks out the earpiece, he slams down the phone, and then he punches the monitor. And it's just, and it's just a little throwaway. It's not, they don't make a big deal out of it. And it's, I'm laughing even now just describing it. And I actually used, there's a, on the TiVo, there's a little back button that goes back 5 seconds or 8 seconds. And I used it, and I watched that like 4 or 5 times in a row, where he just slams it down, and then he just punches the computer monitor like it was just the most natural response in the entire world. God damn, that show is genius. All right.
I'm behind in Entourage and in Sopranos, but I saw the one. Great. Yeah, I saw it when I was at my parents' house, and so he got rid of the old agent, the chick.
He sent her back. Okay. I was tired of her anyway.
Yeah, she's pretty boring.
And I found her, her low cut shirts to be really distracting. Anyway, I was having trouble following whatever she was saying.
I knew her from Son-in-Law. That was distracting.
Yes, I knew her from. I'm more of a fan of her oeuvre with Pauly Shore. Boy, you know, the great thing about Entourage is that Pauly Shore finally has work again. How great that he's managed to just eke out just the tiniest little bit of living just popping up on Entourage. Imagine the hell that it must be to be Pauly Shore. Because I don't think his mom even gives it. I don't think he's even got any money from his mom, Mitzi Shore. I'm pretty sure he's just sitting there, just, you know, trying not to spend all his royalties from Encino, man. All right.
He owns a lot of real estate.
Pauly Shore?
Yeah. Worth a lot.
Interesting. I had no idea. Well, never mind. F him. He doesn't need anybody's help then.
Screw him.
All right. Let's see. I'm going to read this email from Seamus. Then I'll talk about this dead body in Northeast Portland, which is getting, like, no play anywhere. Have you been? Has anybody?
No, I haven't heard about it.
Have you seen anything about it?
It's another dead body in North Portland.
That's the general consensus, I believe.
I'd be concerned if it was in, you know, the West Hills or something.
But when it approaches me, then it's too far.
Right.
And then we'll have this worst song ever, which does involve you on some tangential level, Tim Riley. So, let's see. This email is from Seamus about the Emerson Challenge. Now, as you know, Seamus and many of the other bastards, I'm sorry, listeners in the Rick Emerson audience have put together, I believe now it's $6,541.
Are you kidding me?
For the mentally retarded, for some of God's lesser children, some of God's differently abled children.
Now you've already raised $24.42.
That's the thing. It's $24 a day, every day that I bike to work, every work day between now and a year from today, so May 14th of 2008. But of course, the corollary to that is that every day that I don't bicycle, I am taking $20 away from the retarded. So today, he says, Rick, congratulations. It's one day and $24.42. Pardon me, down for retarded children, and 6,400 remaining. I have to say, while I didn't doubt you, there are more than a few who emailed me over the weekend to say they thought you would flake on the very first ride. Also, we know...
I thought that you were going to. I really didn't believe that you actually rode.
I can't flake today. What kind of an ass would I look like? Now, look, I know that I can seem... I can sometimes seem like a person of dubious virtue, but really, I mean, no matter how tired, exhausted, no matter how out of it, no matter how not wanting to ride a bike I was today, how could I not ride the first day? What kind of a dick would I have looked like if on the very first day I had stolen $25 from retarded children? I mean, come on. He says, also, we know you are lazy, but honestly, but honest, so don't worry about us believing if you rode your bike, because I think we all trust Sarah without question. If she vouches for you, I accept it. And he says, Rick, you're a special kind of hero. Well, thank you. Thanks so much. Now, if the bike is here, it means that I might need it. If I end up taking the bus or whatever, I will cop to that. So, all right.
So you have to ride it every day?
Every work day.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. No pressure.
I don't envy you.
No. No, I don't have the...
Because there are some days that you just don't feel like getting on the bicycle.
Yes, I know.
Thankfully, I don't have to worry about that.
Shut up.
There'll be one more parking spot.
Jerk. Okay, I'm going to read this. This is from... Now, I'm going to read you a succession of emails here. And these are all emails from the same guy tracking a story. This is interesting. It's sort of like layers of sediment that they dig through looking for, like, you know, the evolution of a species. This is the evolution of a story through, I think, three different emails from the same guy. Oh, I'm sorry, the same woman, M. Rick, on Friday, and I got this Sunday. Hi, Rick, on Friday you complained about what your dog found. I was talking about the fact that, I don't want to rehash this whole thing again, but that a homeless man had, a homeless person had toileted.
My mom laughed for like 10 minutes about that.
Yes, yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
A homeless man had toileted in my driveway, which I did not realize until I looked down while walking my dog and realized that my dog had taken what we'll charitably call a special interest in the poo, which is still there, by the way. So now
just scoop it. So
I'm not
going to be done.
What? I don't have a scoop.
You're just going to leave it in your driveway?
Well, eventually the flies will get rid of it.
You have a hose.
I don't. I don't have a hose.
You buy a hose.
I because now it's like when I walk, Max, the first thing Max goes for that every time we leave the house, so I just have to steer him away. I have to walk him the other way down the street now. Anyway, he says, Friday, you complained about what your dog found in the driveway. My neighbor's dog found a dead body this morning. 81st and Northeast Gleason, under a porch, at a house there. Last time I looked up, four cop cars and the block taped off, right next to the Avenue of Roses. The news helicopters haven't shown up yet, but it's only a matter of time. He said, picture this, a little tiny Taco Bell dog and a big dead black woman.
Oh, my God.
Be thankful your little dog only found a dropping. Signed, Glorious Bastard M. All right, so that's from M, that's E, I'm like Emily. So there you go. So that's the first email. All right, here's the follow-up. This is from later that day. I just spoke with my neighbor who spoke to Jim, the guy who found the body. The body was, and this is from an email, this is from a listener, by the way, so I don't know if this is all verified, but apparently this is from a guy who, this is from a woman who was right next door to where it happened. The body was wedged into the slats under the porch.
Really?
I don't even really know what that means, the slats under the porch. Is that like that thing in Stand By Me where Vern is digging underneath the porch and there's a little... Jim is all kinds of creeped out. No newscopters. Police had it cleaned up by 1 o'clock. Tape is gone and there's no mention yet on any websites. The address, 81st and Gleason, is two blocks north of a Vestal grade school. I do have another neighbor, though. He's great. Everybody talks to him. Oh, I bet he knows something about this. All right, that's it. Here's the next email. Jim, who found the body, says her head was between the slats under the porch.
Oh.
Imagine finding a dead body. I've actually thought about that from time to time.
That's my thing. You know how you say you look at the tops of roof? Every time I'm driving, I always look in ditches for dead bodies. I don't know what my problem is.
Creepy.
I've been doing it since I was little.
Did you see a dead body
in
New York?
Maybe I did, but I don't remember it. But I'm always looking for them, and I messed up.
Says her head was between the slats under the porch. I don't even
between
really know what that
slats?
Means. I don't know. He says Jim checked for a pulse and then had passersby call 911. His chihuahua had no comment. He said, thanks so much. I love our audience. It seems kind of weird it's not a bigger story. Signed, Glorious Bastard M. And then all we have here is this, where it just says, and this seems to be the only thing we've got so far, and I can't tell what this is from. This is from some news site, but it doesn't say which one it is. Police are trying to identify a body that was discovered on the porch of a Portland home Sunday. Authorities said a body was discovered near Northeast 80th Avenue in Gleason. Investigators are trying to figure out how the person died, but police said it is not a criminal investigation. And I didn't... Oh, this is from KPTV. So I didn't hear anything about this, which is bizarre. So I guess it was on KPTV, which is what... Is KPTV Fox?
Yes.
Okay. So apparently there's a little thing about it on Fox, but it seems... I guess maybe if the... From now on, I guess if you really want to get a lot of coverage, I guess it's... You need to be blonde to be wearing some sort of a varsity jacket. Try to be clutching a football when you die. You'll be, you'll get a lot more attention paid to you. You'll be on the front. The Oregonian will run many, many, many articles lamenting your death. So there you go. So I guess it is the moral of the story is count one's blessings when walking one's dog.
This story got three lines.
Three lines.
Yeah.
What does it say?
Police are trying to identify a body that was discovered on the porch of a Portland home Sunday. Authorities said a body was discovered near Northeast 80th and Gleason. Investigators are trying to figure out how the person died, but police said it was not a criminal investigation.
Yes.
Well, maybe they're not talking...
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm sorry, Tim.
Because they're not white?
They think it might be a suicide.
One
you know, they
to
don't
draw
talk
that
about
conclusion.
Suicide.
No, but I mean, but they don't even know. I mean, because they wouldn't have reported it. I mean, one hates to draw the conclusion that it's because of the race of the dead person, but it is a little peculiar. I mean, let's just be honest here. I mean, if you were in Lake Oswego and they found some dead body head jammed into the slats beneath the porch, I mean, there'd be helicopters circling that thing right now. So, I mean, it is a little strange. And I don't think it's a suicide because they wouldn't have reported it because apparently they don't report.
Yeah, they don't report suicide.
They don't report suicide. They don't even report the fact that there is a dead body because when the guy jumped off the Paramount, they didn't even do like a little body found on the street. They didn't even talk about it. It's like the body wasn't even there. This email says, Rick, it makes me wonder how many dead people are found in Portland every year and nothing is said about them in the media. Very creepy. So it's completely creepy. All right, do we have time to, yeah, sure, why not? We make our own law here. All right, and preparing the top five, which we will probably get to around the corner. We'll probably do that. But I wanted him to be here for this segment. This, let's see, where's the email? Tim, you'll get to the, you'll see ahead to the punchline here way before it arrives in the email.
Oh.
Rick, I have a musical question. I have heard you and sometimes Tim refer to a song called Swingin'.
Yes.
I'm wondering
about that.
Really? Why were you just thinking about that?
Because it is the worst song ever.
I don't think we've ever really played it on the air.
Oh, we don't have to.
This? No. We have to. Why not? There's a whole generation that doesn't know what swinging is, the song. It says, I am wondering if this is the same swinging I am thinking of. Bad country twang and embarrassing lyrics. I seem to remember this song from growing up. My dad was a big country fan, but I don't know if it's the same song. Please be clarifying this for me. Signed, Jeremy. Well, Jeremy, I'm pretty sure there's really only one song called Swinging with a Bad. And the best part is that this, I mean, Tim and I grew up in different parts of the country at different times, worked at different stations at different times in different states, and yet we both, independent of one another, we both independently arrived at the conclusion that this is, in fact, not only the worst country song ever recorded, but quite possibly the worst song ever recorded in any genre of music ever. Oh, there we go. Where did you find this?
It's in the KUPL music folder.
Okay, just you have to stop it for a second. Just we'll start from the beginning. It's in the couple music folder. We should call and request it. I went to all the trouble of bringing it in from home. All right, ladies.
Oh, is it smoky on now?
Yes.
Call up like some toothless woman who loves him.
Call up and just do take a lot of pauses.
Sorry,
during
Rick,
the call.
I don't mean to steal your thunder.
No, that's fine.
I'm calling from 80th and Division.
Just take a break every so often during the call just to hack up some phlegm. Spit it into a coffee can. God damn, and my dad loved this song because he was stupid. This is among the worst songs you will ever hear. And the flip side of this song, by the way, I even know what the flip side of this song. I sound like Don Geronimo. The flip of this single, the B-side, this came out on MCA Records, by the way. The flip side was a terrible cover of Ray Charles' Busted. Cotton is down to a quarter of a pound and I'm busted. Great song, mangled by this idiot white man. Let's now listen, ladies and gentlemen, to the worst song ever recorded. And this was a hit. It was a huge hit. Because, I mean, by the same audience that made that the Elvira song a hit. So let's go ahead and roll it. Ladies and gentlemen, John Anderson's Swingin'. I forbid anyone to tune out. You must all listen to this with me.
Oh, 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 oh. There's a little girl in our neighborhood. Her name is Charlie Johnson. She's really looking good.
Is he the singer?
No, he's from the South.
So I called her on the phone. I walked over to her house and this was going on. Her brother was on the sofa eating chocolate pie. Mama was in the kitchen cutting, kicking up to fry. Daddy was in the backyard going up a garden hose. I was on the porch with Sean and feeling up down to my toes and we were swinging.
Oh.
This song gives you cancer. It really does. This gives you cancer of the taste. Oh. I mean, there's so many bad things about this song, I almost can't begin to list them all. And the worst part is that it's trying to be all funky with that little guitar thing.
Yes, you'll be swinging.
Oh, nice to be sexy.
Those in my head, those female backup singers all look like Flo from Alice for some reason. I don't know why. I'm out here on the front porch in the swing. That's a fake accent. This guy's real name is like John Leibowitz or something. I'll tell you right now, that's a fake accent. Playing with her, it makes me almost high. And Charlotte is my lover, and she has been since the... Don't ever use the word lover.
Ew. Can't believe it started on her front porch in the swing,
just a swinging. Scotty knows that this is huge karaoke bars.
Really?
Apparently.
Oh, go and see this one. Little Charlie, she's as pretty as an angel when it's playing. I can't believe I'm out here on a front porch in the swing, just a swing.
I'm getting a lot of email. Things like, F you that blows. Why do you hate us? No, I want to clarify for Jeremy that it is in fact the same song. Ugh. I can't believe this is in the couple. No. Rick, this song makes Elvira sound like Bob Dylan. Says this email. I can't believe this song is in the couple folder. They must just rip every CD they get in its entirety. I can't imagine they would ever play that. I can't imagine that there's any circumstance under which the John Paul would ever allow that song to be on the air.
I think they relax for a while on folding metal chair as we told the next line dance.
There you go.
Yeah, I think this is from a prior reincarnation of the station.
I would hope so. I would hope so. Let's try a money-losing format, shall we? Lots of John Anderson. Then just the sound of bones breaking. All right, let's take a break. We'll have good music later. We'll do the top five later this hour. Top five anthems of all time. Oh, thank you so much. Listen to this. Just let it wash the pain away. Back after this, the Rick Emerson Show continues. More of Tim Riley ahead. Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. Don't go anywhere. It's AM 970 Solid State Radio. Here's the Riverdale. This email says, make it stop. Good God, make it stop. Rick, as soon as you said worst song ever, somehow I knew it was swinging. Now I must kill myself and no one will report on it. Best show ever. Please never play that again. 503-733-2970 coming up here in just a few. We got today's top five rock anthems of all time. And, you know, there's so many. And I will just preemptively say this. There's so many I didn't get to. I mean, there's so many songs. I'm looking at this right now, this top five rock anthems. I mean, it's so hard to boil it down. You should see the songs that I didn't put on the list. I mean, there's just songs that I really wanted to put on, but I mean, you got to draw the line somewhere. So we'll do that here in just a few. 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, please pay heed. He is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your...
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Portland jet skier has been found safe after searching the Oregon coast. On the water, in the sea, in the air, turned out the missing jet skier was just sleeping it off in a hotel. The Coast Guard launches search for Charles Hindenburg.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All the humanity.
After the jet skier got stuck in the sandbar and never disappeared. Well, then, apparently, he never called people to tell him, man, he was just sleeping off in a hotel and he's fine. So, they spotted him fueling up after spending the night in the hotel.
Yeah, lucky he wasn't from Northeast. They wouldn't have looked for him.
Well, that's true, too.
All right. Hey, Scotty, I'm printing something to Becca's printer. If you can bring that in, that'd be fantastic. All right. Thank you.
Meanwhile, soldiers serving overseas could lose some of their online links to friends and loved ones. The Defense Department has decided to unplug YouTube and MySpace and 11 popular websites on computers and networks. This according to a memo sent down to the service. The policy is being implemented to protect information and reduce drag on the department's networking.
I'm sure that's exact. Because, of course, the government doesn't have bandwidth to spare. Mm-hmm. Reduce drag on... It couldn't possibly be because everybody is filming themselves saying, God, it sucks. Can I come home now? Mm-hmm. All for the love of God. I mean, the only thing that's interesting about this story, thank you, is that I'm amazed that they actually have it. It's YouTube and what? MySpace?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and stupid videos. Black Planet High Five, and music sites such as Pandora, MTV, and Live 365.
I mean, I'm sort of amazed.
And the photo sharing site, Photo Bucket.
I'm amazed that they actually have or had unfettered internet access.
Yeah.
I mean, I just sort of assume that when you're in the military, they don't let you do anything like that. You know what I mean? Like, whenever, you know, they'll always do those things where, you know, the news crew will go over there and they'll have a tent set up and the military, you know, the GIs go in one by one. And do they still call them GIs?
I guess so.
What does that stand for?
General something.
General inductees, perhaps?
Yeah, something like that.
Let's just say that it does.
Yeah, that's fine.
Can I just tell you this? I drove by the greatest business the other day. It's out when I was going to the Pirates Tavern.
Mm-hmm.
It's a company called General Tool.
Oh, I like that.
And on the front, there's a picture of a guy who's like a little sort of nutcracker military man. He apparently is General Tool.
That's different.
Well, anyway, it was funny to me. General Tool. No, they do these things in the military where, you know, they have the tent set up and then the guys come in, you know, whoever, and they say, is there anything you'd like to say to the people back home? And then, as you know, the guy looks at the camera and says, well, I'd just like to say we're here and I can't wait to be back home and whatever it is they say. And you always wonder, they claim that those guys have sort of, you know, as long as they're not revealing troop positions or something, that they have sort of the right to say whatever they want. But I sort of take it as an article of faith that they can't. Like, you can't. I mean, if you're in the military, yeah, and when you are being interviewed by the press, and the press says, hey, so how's life here in Baghdad? I mean, are you allowed to say, like, this sucks, and like... And
I would imagine it has to go through some kind of censor.
Living hell?
I don't think there's anybody left over there anyway.
I don't even know who's even around to look through that stuff. And this, of course, it prompts me to ask for the 9 millionth time, whatever happened to the Iraqi information minister? It frustrates me that nobody knows. So, all right. Anywho, is that the end of that story?
It is, yes.
It's a good place for me to interject this. Do you know that guy, the old guy who whacked the old woman in the head with the hammer in the Fred Meyer? Where was it? Was it Beaverton? Okay. Do you know that he was previously arrested in Vancouver
for karate chopping some kid?
For karate chopping a little boy in the throat for saying hello to him. Hello, right there. Kids, don't talk to strangers. Exactly. All right, 503-733-297. The Rick, I spent the better part of the 1980s flushing the song Swinging out of my memory. Now it's back, and I'll be singing it for the rest of the week. God damn you to hell. Thank you, sir. It's 503-733-297. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hi.
GI is a little bit of a military joke. GI used to appear on a lot of the equipment they'd give people. It stands for General Issue. And so soldiers are referred to GIs because, you know, you aren't an individual.
Your
personality doesn't really matter.
All right. Is that true?
Well, a little bit. When I was in basic training, okay, I was referred to as a number for about 9 weeks.
The next person we get that works on the show, like we get an intern, we're just going to call them by a number. Whoever it is. I know Susan.
I recommend number 6.
Okay. Let's see. I'm writing it down right now. No, Susan Reynolds has got some people that are applying to be interns because Scotty's claiming he's overworked and needs somebody to boss around. So whoever we get is just going to be, we're not going to give them a name. They're just going to be number 6. All right. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi, Rick. What's going on?
What's up?
On the topic of obscure business name, I live in a town just north of Vancouver called Battleground, and there's a place there called, it's colon hydrotherapy, and the building that it's in is called the rectory.
Is that true, really?
That is completely true. It's like an old church that, I don't know, it's not a church anymore.
Let me ask you this. Is this Healing Waters hydrotherapy?
Apparently so, you know, I'm not sure.
Sarah, do you know anything about Healing Waters?
I loved that place.
Sarah had her colon cleaned at that place.
As did you.
Yes, it's true. I didn't really enjoy it as much.
But this is after it was an official rectory.
Yes. Yeah, it wasn't when it was a church.
No.
Although apparently you can't.
Those services are still available.
I was going to say, you can actually get that done depending on what diocese you live in and how supple you are. All right, thank you.
Okay.
All right. I'm so glad we arrived at that joke at around the same time. It's good to know that we're all of a mind here. Here's Tim Riley.
My second least favorite song is Baby's Got Her Blue Jeans On.
And then babies got...
Is that Charlie Pride?
No, that was, I think, Knob Block and somebody.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Heaven help me, baby.
Oh, no. We've discovered a brand new parlor game. It's called Crap We Used to Have to Play.
Down the corner.
Oh, God. Who is this? Is that the artist?
Mel McDaniel.
Mel McDaniel. He did... Did Mel McDaniel... No, that's Mac Davis. Mac Davis did It's Hard to Be Humble.
Yeah. Watch her till she's gone.
You know, the weird thing is, I was going to say that country music used to be crap.
Lord have mercy, baby's got her blue jeans on.
Lord, that's Lord, L-A-W-D. But really, this doesn't sound too much different from the country music they do today, does it? Boy, you know what I listened to the other day? Lest anybody paint with an overly broad brush here, I was listening to Redheaded Stranger, the Willie Nelson album. Boy, that's great. Listen to that record just the other day. He's coming to the Clark County. Him and the old 97 to the Drive-By Truckers. Because there is a lot of really great country music. Most of it probably will not be found in the particular tab that Sarah's browsing through on the computer, but... Boy, this is a terrible song.
It is.
What else is in your pick? Give me a random title from something else in this.
Can we just pick one?
Well, don't play it, certainly.
Oh.
Let's see.
A random title?
Yeah, give me a random title.
Better Class of Loser?
Oh, I remember that one.
Really?
I'm going back to A Better Class of Loser.
Who does that?
Randy Travis.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, Black Velvet.
You know, that's not the Alanna Miles version, though. It's the what's-her-name version.
Robin Lee.
You know, the great Randy Travis song. Randy Travis sang that song. I forget what it was, but it had that line, is it still over? We still through? Since my phone still ain't ringing, I assume it still ain't you. You know, country music is really great for turns of a phrase. That's what they're good at. Country artists really, the guys who write those country songs. Mm-hmm. Can I tell you a little secret, Tim Riley?
Yes.
Here's a little insight into the soul of Rick Emerson. Do you know that if I was not doing this, if I was not a radio talk show host, if this was not my profession, you know, my dream job is to be a country songwriter, and I'm completely serious about that. I don't mean that. I'm not joshing you. If I could do something else for a living, it would be to write and country, not because I necessarily like to listen to that kind of music. Mm-hmm. But they are pop based, and I sort of, it's not like I'm a great songwriter, but in the past I've written a couple songs, and I do have a sort of weird perverse knack for writing.
What's the song called? Geek Like Me?
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. That was really well written.
Well, what I was going to say is I have a knack for writing formulaic pap. So I thank you for that. That's a song I wrote for Aaron and Jen's wedding. But I've written a lot of really bad country songs in the past, just as like a goof. And I knew a guy real briefly, a couple months ago. I worked with a guy, and he had spent some time as a Nashville songwriter, and it was like the greatest life. He said, you know, he lived in Nashville on Music Row on 16th Avenue, which Lazy J. Dalton sang about once. That's a great country song, 16th mm-hmm. Avenue by Lazy J. Dalton. And he said he would get up around noon, and he and his songwriting partner would walk down to the studio, and they would spend like 4 or 5 hours sitting around with a guitar playing, you know, writing songs. And their goal was to try to come up with a song a day. Maybe it sold, maybe it didn't, maybe it was good, maybe it wasn't. But they'd get in around noon, and they'd knock off around 5, and the deal is they would try to write one song a day. And then he would just spend the rest of the day doing it, whatever. But that was his job, was to try to write one country song a day. The best life. If I could trade in this job right now for that, I think I might actually be tempted to do it. If I knew how to do that somehow. Anyway, I can't believe that was prompted by you mentioning Baby's Got Her Blue Jeans On.
Yeah.
What were we talking about?
I don't remember.
General Tool. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, the Oregon Senate has approved a bill allowing some women convicted of prostitution to be able to teach?
Yes.
Supporter Senator Margaret Carter, who's a Portland Democrat, invoked the gospel of redemption and forgiveness and the sins of judgment. Carter had pushed a similar bill last session, but withdrew it because it wouldn't pass. Decisions would be made on a case-to-case basis by the Oregon Teachers Standards and Practices Commission. Apparently, a lot of these ex-prostitutes want to become teachers.
John gives you $300 for half and half. Your pimp takes 30%. How much is left? Jokes just write themselves. That's why I can't write country songs, because I'm here writing bad jokes about hookers. Aye. Let's continue. Let's do one more, and then we'll break, and we'll come back. Hey, Scotty, do we have Mr. Peter Carlin at the top of the hour? Is that when that's happening? Is that how we're going to roll? Yes, okay. And then we'll do the top five after that. Here's Tim Riley. We'll do one more.
Harry Potter series author J.K. Rowling is warning fans not to believe everything they hear. She writes on her official site that readers of her book should be aware of spoilers. While conceded, there'll always be some sad individuals who get their kicks from ruining other people's fun. The seventh and the final book in the series, Harry Potter and the Deadly Hallows, is due in stores July 21st. Rowling says that spoilers don't stop people from buying the book. They never have.
Nope. And I'm telling you right now, I'm absolutely going to wait in line at midnight like an idiot. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to go home. I'm going to lock the door, and I'm not reemerging until I've read the entire thing. That's it. I'm not going to go online. I'm not going to turn on the television.
Is it out in the middle of the week or on the weekend?
It's a Friday night, Saturday morning. Friday night, midnight.
Okay, cool.
So, I'm going to get it Saturday morning, Friday night, go home, and I'm going to spend the entire weekend reading it. And I'm not going to check my email. I'm not going to answer the phone. I'm not going to read a text message, anything, until I've consumed it all. So there you go. Let's see. Rick, on Milwaukee Avenue, just north of Bybee, there's a building called the C.A. Butt Building. That's C.A. as in whatever. All right. 503-733-2970. Well, let's just break now, shall we? It's 503-733-2970. You can email. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Coming up here in just a few, we got Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. Then the top five ahead. More from Tim Riley. Like is at 3. Don and Mike at 7. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't go anywhere.
This was
Tim McGraw.
Oh. This was my friend Elaine. This was their song. It is the worst.
Her and her husband.
Yeah.
Is this Elaine that moved to Wenatchee?
Yes.
So it all fits together, doesn't it? Hi, I'm a hick.
We can't leave her behind.
Is she wearing white stretch pants yet?
I haven't seen her in a while.
You don't want her to go.
Oh, I hate this song.
Mind, and Johnny said, hey, Jimmy Johnson, they call me
you know
Johnson.
You know the word
stretching for a rhyme.
I know.
And you know, and he's in Friday Night Lights, the movie, and he's so good, and then he sings this dribble. Is this a delayed wedding song, or just with their song in general?
Their song.
All right, here's a little trashy moment. And then we got Peter Carlin coming up. Top five rock anthems. More from Tim Riley. The last time my mom got married, her song, it's my mom's wedding song. Wasn't just her song with her man. It was her wedding song was I Swear by John Michael Montgomery.
Oh, my God. Is it I Swear by the Moon and the Stars?
By the Moon and the Stars and the Sky.
I just remember
listening
to that band. Was it All for One?
Well, they did, and then John Michael Montgomery did the country version. John Michael Montgomery, famous for that I Like It, I Love It, I Want Some More of It song. It's so sad that I know this much about country music. Goddamn, radio sucks. And I'm not just thinking, I'm not saying country radio, like, I'm just saying radio, you get all of this crap pounded into your head that you just, like, know it whether you want to know it or not. I can't tell you, like, here's another example of how radio sucks. I used to work in this, and then we'll get Peter. I used to work in the same building not smooth jazz, but a new age station. And I mean, fathom working next to a new age radio station. Lots of bands with names like Shadowfax, and a lot of, I mean, who listens to new age? Really, honestly, who listens to new age?
My aunt does.
Really?
Well, she's kind of...
Does she run a massage place? Because that's really the only place you ever hear that.
Yeah, she's very all, like, mystical and makes beaded jewelry.
Does she have a lot of crystals around?
You'd think she was gorgeous. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, she's a beautiful woman. She has, like...
That's kind of creepy that you're saying that about a family member.
No, she's awesome. My Aunt Carol, she's like my hip aunt.
I'm just saying it's kind of creepy that you identified somebody in your family as being somebody that I would find gorgeous.
I think you think she's pretty.
Really? Do you have a picture? Mm-hmm. You find one?
I'm sure I could.
Yeah. So I worked next to this new age station. And after a while, I found myself, God help me, recognizing certain new age, which is especially way more difficult than country, especially difficult with new age, because it's all the same. It's just one, it's like reggae. It's just one song, over and over. One song, many faces. One song, one artist. God, this radio just sucks, because it just pounds things into your head that you can... Why would I be able to recite that stupid John Anderson song, word for word? Because radio is like a tapeworm. It just gets into your head. Suddenly you find yourself able to recite things you never thought you could.
I have some intro music for Peter Carlin.
Give it to me, Jim. What?
Come on, Jim.
Come on, Jim. I've got to have it. Jim, I need it.
I can't believe nobody else noticed.
I don't know if anybody knows what we're talking about right now. All right, let's welcome Peter Carlin to the... I hate you. Okay, but imagine this being sung by a hick. You know my mom got married, don't you? I've told you. Do you remember?
No.
Kennewick Eagles Lodge. Bam!
Awesome. They keep beer there.
Down to the Rick Emerson Show. Oregonian TV critic with a heart full of hate and something full of, I don't know, cherry souffle. Peter Carlin, hello, sir.
Hi.
How's life? How are things?
They're fine, thank you.
You sound a little abrupt today. Yes.
What do you want me to do? talk a little more about Shadowfax?
Let me... Okay,
how
first
about
of all,
Eric Ting's dad?
Let me just say this.
How about a little Mannheim steamroller for you?
Man, you know, here's the thing. When I worked at that down the hall from the New Age station, when Christmas time would come around, that's all it was. It was just the music of Chip Davis over and over and over and over all day long.
Same dude from Convoy, right?
Well, no. Well, yes and no.
He had a sex change operation?
The music for Convoy was done by Chip Davis, yes. The voice in Convoy, the guy, because C.W. McCall was an amalgam. There was Chip Davis who did the music, and then there was Bill Freeze, who was actually he was the voice of Convoy. He went on to do a series of Wonder Bread commercials, I believe, after that.
Really?
Yeah, he was the guy. And a Jimmy Holland Hogs. That guy?
Yeah.
That's Bill Freeze. He was an advertising executive.
Wow.
And then somehow they got together and they blah, 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 blah. Convoy. So, there you go. Hey, I made a bunch of notes. Where did they go? If only I had them in front of me. If only I had my peppers. Okay, so I made some notes about last night's Sopranos. First of all, let's get your thoughts on last night's Sopranos. And I think this has been largely disproven.
Okay.
But I wondered if a little bit, if a little bit it was possible, how do I put this? When Christopher was driving the SUV at the beginning of last night's Sopranos, did it almost seem for a second like he was swerving into traffic deliberately? Like he was having a little bit of a suicidal moment there before the whole thing happened? Am I the only one that caught a little bit of that? Because it's like he was crying and he was sort of, and Tony was looking at him and gave him a long suspicious look right before the accident happened.
I think he was wired, dude. He was, that's why he was so freaked about about the drugs in his blood.
Because he was coked up.
Yeah. I mean, you saw how sort of twitchy and dark-eyed and weird he looked with that hat crammed on his head when he was at the meeting at the Staten Island Ferry terminal there. And, you know, that's what that was about. I read somewhere else some speculation that, like, oh, you know, there was a microphone in the hat. You know, he totally already turned and, you know, and he's already been ratting to the FBI. I believe that Tony is still screwed for a variety of reasons, but I don't think that was it, man. I mean, and Christopher has, you know, clearly had issues. I think that if that one relapse he'd had during the episode last week where he was wasted again, whether he had shaken that off and gone back to the straight and narrow, it'd be a lot more, I'd be a lot more willing to entertain the notion that he was ratting at that moment.
Right.
But as it was, he was just ripped, man, you know. And the way he kept talking about smelling the roses and stuff, you know, he's just a dude who didn't have the... who couldn't see straight.
And the great thing about the Tony, you know, just finally killing him, just offing him, is that that's not a thing that came out of nowhere. That's one of those, you can tell that part of Tony, you know, because a recurring theme in The Sopranos is those guys longing for, you know, back in the day, longing for the old school.
Mm.
And those guys, you know, in everything from the Sinatra worship to the deification of sort of the old school guys who've been in prison, to their dead fathers and their uncles and the guys who were kind of around, who were, you know, who were real hardcore about it, like back in the day and so forth. And you can tell that Tony, he's had that whole thing of like, there's no one, like, Tony simultaneously resents and hates all the weight and the authority and the pressure and responsibility put on him as boss, but by the same token, doesn't want to give any responsibility to anybody else, largely because he doesn't feel like there's anybody who's worthy of it.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, he's right in that. I mean, they're all idiots.
Yeah.
Who among those guys would you trust to,
you know, to pick up your shopping list, let alone...
Really? There's only Sill. I mean, it's just him.
But even Sill, what was interesting to me is how when they responded to... when they came to... They all flocked over to Tony's house after Christopher died, and, you know, to kind of pay their respects or whatever, and to kind of, you know, to coalesce, as people will do. And all the dudes sort of threw in their one, like, one line, you know, to sort of celebrate the life of Christopher, and except, you know, were to mourn his passing. But what they all did was just essentially reveal their own selfishness, their
right.
own inability to feel a single human thing. And Sill was first, he said something like, you know, I can't believe he's really gone. That crazy bleep.
Right, right,
you know?
Yeah.
Our Chrissy, that crazy...
That crazy effer, or whatever they called him.
Yeah.
And of course,
no, it was that crazy effing maniac.
Yeah, I mean, and Pauly said that, you know, and Pauly was, you know, he was sad about it for like 30 seconds, and then nobody shows up at like his mom's or, you know, his aunt's,
yeah.
mom, whatever, his putative mother's funeral. And then Pauly is just suddenly, Pauly, nobody's here. And, you know, suddenly he's all pissed off about that.
Yeah. No, his first response is, your kid always had a lead foot. Practically put me through a billboard once. It's all
right.
about Pauly, you
that's,
know.
That's right. God.
So he did have a flicker of humanity where he suddenly began to wonder whether he had been unfair to the lad.
Right.
Over the years, you
well,
know.
Well, he said that my last discussion was a fight about money, you know, or
You're
whatever.
You're like his dad. I was like his Dutch uncle. It's like, I'm not even familiar with that expression.
I don't even know what it
means.
I have no idea what a Dutch uncle is. Sarah, Dutch uncle?
Nope.
All right, there you go. We got nothing. Let's see. What else? Other notes to myself. Note. What the hell are they doing with AJ?
Oh, check it out, dude. I've got a total theory on that.
Okay, well, go ahead, because I got nothing.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like, on the one hand, they're trying to do this thing of making him like a little microcosm of Tony, like a sort of pupa stage Tony.
Well,
but it's not convincing to me. Like
he's not. I mean, to some extent, he feels obligated to do that or whatever. Or there's a certain amount to which, you know, the thing doesn't fall farther from the bigger thing. But to coin a phrase,
that's where that award-winning journalism comes in, right?
You
there.
Like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's rocking. But here's the deal. They keep talking about, especially in the coming attractions or the previously on Hill Street Blues part, they keep mentioning the antidepressant that he's on.
Right.
And what I'm wondering is if, you know how sometimes kids will do, I mean, I think kids in particular, but sometimes adults as well, a side effect of those antidepressants can sometimes be like wild mood swings.
Like mania. Yeah.
Ranging from mania to full-on, like, suicidal depression.
Right.
And a lot of these guys who act out and do, like, crazy, awful things, like violent, horrible things, and sometimes it's suicidal and sometimes not, you know, they're, you know... parents or someone will, you know, they'll wonder this, you know, like whether they'll connect it to the fact that, you know, that they've been taking this drug, and golly gee whiz, is there a connection? And I think sometimes there is. So you saw his mood swing going from the kind of incipient, I mean, he didn't really getting turned on by the violence that he saw the Jasons do,
right,
the young thugs, being kind of a party to it. It's not actually doing it himself. But then the moment he heard the college professor lecturing about Wordsworth having everything and yet still being depressed, that just totally threw him for a loop. And, you know, and then within a day or two, by the next time he went to see his shrink, he was distraught. I mean, and that's weird behavior, obviously. And, you know, I think it's symptomatic of, you know, the dude is not really the captain of his own ship right now.
Which sort of does then bring up the larger question of, I guess it's David Chase isn't going to pander to us enough to sort of wrap everything up neatly in three episodes. I guess that wouldn't, he's not that kind of a writer, and I guess he would probably say that, you know, once the series is over, like, that world still sort of exists, I guess, and so it would be wrong to sort of just start to tie things up with a red bow.
Well, it sort of depends. I mean, there's this whole discussion on, there's a really, really interesting blog about The Sopranos that plays out like Mondays and Tuesdays on Slate.com. And one of the things that they're talking about, and also is whether, there's another site too, but I can't remember the address right now, but on Slate, they're talking about whether Chase, you know, he's so, that he's so sort of eager to defy your expectations. Will he defy your expectation that he'll defy your expectation?
Right, right.
And double reverse it, and so suddenly everything does get wrapped up
right.
in some neat way. You know, everything that you sort of imagine, that your first impulse
was going to, you know, was to think would happen, but then your second impulse was to realize there's no way because he never rolls like that. You know, is it, you know, so do you now go with your third impulse that, oh, holy moly, he really is going to do those things?
Well, I'll say this. One of the things that they developed recently is, and I was so angry when they killed Johnny Sackhoff because he was my favorite character apart from Tony. But, man, Phil Leotardo is just a bad, bad person. I mean, he's really fascinating.
The brow.
I mean, he's just awful.
Yeah, yeah.
What else do we other notes to myself. Boy, I really did feel, I had a kind of an F.U. David Chase moment last night, though. When he inadvertently reveals to Dr. Melfi that he killed Christopher and then it's a dream.
That made me so angry. Okay. At first, I was with you. When that first happened, I thought to myself, well, that's weird, because usually they signal in some visual way. They signal to you when they're entering dreamland.
Right.
But in this case, they didn't. It was a very brief sequence. He was at the doctor's office. It was shot just like they always shoot sequences between him and her. And he's talking about Christopher's death, saying things that we know he thinks.
Right.
And then suddenly segging into, you know, basically saying, well, you know, I've murdered people before.
Yeah. I'm not saying it was a cheap trick or anything.
No, here's the thing. To me, it was a pivot point that sort of that showed where the rest of the episode was going, which was, you know, he goes to Las Vegas from there, kind of on a solo journey. And he meets up with this woman who's like a stripper who is a friend of Christopher's, you know, sort of ostensibly to tell her that their friend has died. But then, you know, of course, very soon he's having sex with her and they're hanging around. And she turns him on to some really killer weed.
Peyote buttons or whatever.
And then they get into the peyote. He asks after the peyote. And so so the Don of New Jersey becomes Don Juan, you know. And so he ends up having this kind of waking coma dream, which takes us back to the beginning of this season, you know, which actually was last year.
He's in the coma with the
and staying in a hotel in some anonymous town in the middle of nowhere, and having this kind of transcendent experience.
I never really thought about that. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's because I'm a TV critic. I've got the license.
Okay.
So it's not legal for you to do this kind of analysis.
Don't attempt this at home.
Yeah, anyway. So he ends up having exactly that same kind of experience, and a lot of the same, the symbolism is the same. You know, when the peyote begins to hit him, he looks up and he sort of focuses on the bathroom light on the ceiling above him, which evokes the light that he kept seeing in the sky during the coma dream.
Yeah.
And then in the end, after he kind of wanders around and he sort of begins winning at roulette for the first time in recent memory, and they end up in the desert watching the sunrise, which of course is another light in the sky, and it ends with him still, you know, wasted, but now laughing like as happy as you've ever seen Tony Soprano, saying, "I get it, I get it."
Oh, now is that what he was seeing? Here's the thing: is would he sing "I get it"? Because
I thought he said "I did it."
That's what I heard.
But then I went to the HBO wrap up. They do kind of a thing, and it said, because I wrote it down originally as "I did it,"
yeah.
Then it came out as "I get it." So I thought, like, okay, well, you know, I'm gonna obviously, if that's coming straight out of HBO,
sure, yeah,
then I'm just gonna. You know.
Well, I know we're kind of short on time here, so I'll just a couple. It was just such a great episode. A couple of brief notes. Just wrote to myself. Juliana Margulies equals scorching. Boy, God, and I'm glad they brought her back. Just even if just to sort of like to show her to us once more and kind of resolve that, like, you know, she's still alive, I guess.
Yeah, the character. But do you prefer her straight or
strung out?
Strung out.
I prefer her strung out in a bra, vomiting into a bucket. Seriously, that, I gotta say, that episode where she and Christopher are on the couch, half dressed, just smacked out of their brain on heroin, and she's throwing up in the corner, was so gross and disgusting and so hot all at once. And maybe that says something wrong and weird about me.
Maybe.
But goddamn, it was sexy. It really was just vile and just arousing all at once. I don't know. Let's see. And then final two notes. which is one is I actively hate Carmella Soprano, but I just really proactively root for bad things to happen to her. She is such a terrible person. I don't know why that's just sort of really hitting me now, but it's like every episode, every time she speaks, she's just so shallow and hypocritical and simultaneously feigns all of this despair over yet revels in all of these. She is never happier than when something horrible has happened to someone.
Oh, you've got a problem with the ladies, I think.
Yeah. It's because I want to see Juliana Margulies vomiting.
Yeah, you want to see her vomiting, and you can't stand...
it's not...
And Carmella's the only one on that show who hasn't, like, killed somebody.
No, but, you know, but the thing about Carmella is
you're sort of okay with the murder, but the sort of the more quieter kind of hypocrisy drives you wild.
It's that Carmella has such a sort of pious face that she shows. I mean, I guess you can say that Tony lies about being a murderer, but, you know, you murder, but what are you going to do? He's not going to tell everybody. Carmella tries to be so religious and so pious and virtuous and kind and whatever. And clearly, though, she, you know, just salivates, just is so almost aroused by misfortunes that happen to other people.
Whoa.
It's really off-putting to me. I mean, she's just a terrible person in a lot of ways. Let's see. And then my final note is actually about Entourage last night, which is Ari punching the phone. Best thing ever. There's that moment where Ari hangs up on that producer and he does a three-stage. He pulls out his Bluetooth thing, hangs up the phone, and then he's so angry he actually punches the screen of the phone, which is just one. I actually rewound it and watched that two or three times in a row. Just one of the funniest things I have ever seen Jeremy Piven do on that show.
Huh.
So Entourage is great. Do you real quick, and as we're really late here, but do you disagree with my assessment of Carmella?
Oh, you know, I don't know. I think it's odd to single her out for...
I'm not singling her out. I'm saying it's a given that the other guys are bad. That's my point. It's No one would ever say that Tony Soprano's a good guy. They're all thugs and thieves and murderers.
Hypocrites. But what about the girls in the car that Tony and Christopher kill? Somebody else... This is the other... it was on this blog called The House Next Door by Matt Zoller Sace, which is also worth checking out. In fact, they have fantastic analyses on that blog, The Sopranos and Lost and a lot of the great shows. But his point was that those two characters, that was like the most important, according to Matt, that was the most important scene like in the whole series, where these two sort of sweet-faced girls see this horrible accident take place. And one goes, should we call for help? And the other one looks at her, the driver looks at her friend and says, like, no way.
My permit's only good during the day.
Yeah, I'm driving at night with my learner's permit.
Yeah.
You know, I can't, you know, I'll get busted.
Yeah. Well, and they
just keep right on rolling.
And that's the whole thing. That's my deal with Carmella, is that the others are sort of, it's indisputed that they're bad people, but Carmella is the one that sort of passes as a decent person, and yet in a way, she is just as bad as the others because she willfully turns a blind eye and is bought off with like the 30 pieces of silver, you know, that is the house, and the house she's building.
Yes.
And, you know...
Well, she's a hypocrite like the rest of them, I mean, but they all are. I mean, just that she, you know, among them is not murderous, at least. Though, you know, again, I mean, she has those flickers of conscience, I mean, particularly involving Adriana, but, you know, the moment Tony got her spec house up and rolling again, she was like, oh, okay, well, whatever.
Yeah.
And away she goes.
Hey, do you know they're going to run these final three episodes, you know, in other words, 3 weeks, or are they going to space it out with some, you know, jackhole like best of or something, or is it going to be the next 3 weeks, you know?
Dude, I don't even know.
All right.
I think it's just three straight weeks. I may be wrong. I mean, usually they do kind of a two-week lag, right?
I think so. I'm never quite clear. I can never really follow.
My question is, how long is that final episode? Is it just like 51 minutes like the rest of them, or is it going to be some epic... 1 hour and 90, you know, 25-minute one.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to believe. You know, you just sort of accept that the Sopranos are sort of there.
Right.
It's going to be weird to think that it's going to be gone soon. So, all right. Well, next, we don't have time to talk about The Shield, but we'll talk more about The Shield next time. So, all right.
Right on.
My friend, thank you. Read him in print in the Oregonian online at OregonLive.com. He is Peter Carlin. Thank you, sir.
Hey, you bet.
There you go. There's Peter Carlin, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we got break. We'll be back after this. Chad says, buzzkill. Is this about me, Scotty? Am I a buzzkill? Who is the buzzkill that Chad is referring to? Is it me? Or Peter? Great. Well, I'm glad Peter's gone. We'll take that call. Great. We'll take that call when we get back then. All right. We'll get your calls around the corner. Tim Riley and the top five rock anthems of all time. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. Rick Emerson Show, about half an hour away from Tom Likas, Donna Mike at 7. In just a moment, Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth, and we'll try to squeeze in the top five rock anthems of all time. Rick, here's another transitional sound effect. Do you know what this is? I wonder if you can figure it out. I wonder if Sarah has even heard this before. I don't know. Let me see what it is. Let me roll this here.
What is it?
I don't know. It's a transitional sound, like the Batman one that we used last week. Apparently, this is a different transitional sound. We had the Batman, and then what was the other transitional? Oh, we had the... What is that? I never heard that before. Oh, it's going to bug me now. I wonder what that even is. I can't remember. Oh, let me play one more time. No, it can't be played, apparently. Wait. I have no idea. Do you know what that is?
No.
All right. Well, it doesn't matter. Ladies and gentlemen of the Ministry of Truth, here's Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Well, you probably forgot about it, threw it away, but tomorrow's another election day. Let's see. Well, nothing really important, just, let's see, candidates from various boards from Portland Community College, whoop-de-doo, and to all of them, Valley Fire Rescue. Also, property tax are due tomorrow. Make sure they're postmarked, at least by tomorrow.
What about that pedophile in St. Helens? Is he running for something tomorrow?
Oh, school board.
Yeah. Well done,
he's the best candidate.
He's the best they can find. Mm-hmm. The best they can do. Well, he does have experience with children, apparently, so...
Newt Gingrich said there's a great possibility he'll run for president.
Oh, please let it be true. Can you imagine?
He'll make the decision sometime in the fall.
Oh, that's so great.
He's thinking about it.
That's so wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it happens. All right. Who would you rather see, Hillary versus Giuliani or Hillary versus Newt?
Oh, that is a tough call.
I mean, just who do you think would give us better news, better stories to report, Hillary versus Newt or Hillary versus Rudy?
I think Rudy can get himself in trouble if he's in the public eye every
day. I hope so. I really hope that that's the case.
All right.
Oh, we have an answer on the transitional sound. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, I think it's the Brady Bunch tiki sound. Every time you stop, they play that sound.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. From the Vincent Price episode. Okay. All right. No, fair enough. That totally makes sense. That is it. Thank you, sir.
Peace.
God bless you. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
Mark the Brit sends along this email that the new Bionic Woman is a popular EastEnders actress.
Yeah.
Michelle Ryan, she was voted FHM's fifth sexiest woman of 2005 in UK.
She is really, really hot, I'll give you that. But
she is.
I don't really know that there's much call for a new Bionic Woman television. I don't really know who's clamoring for that.
Well, it's not just big dogs that need a place to run. The Little Dogs Activity Book author, Deborah Wood, says the exercise needs of pint-sized poochie should be taken into consideration. Even a small amount of weight gain can do a lot of damage to a little dog.
My little dog, Pogo, had gained about a half a pound. And in that case, about half a pound was about the equivalent of a 10-pound weight gain. Tests have shown that dogs that are slender live an average of about 2 years longer than dogs that aren't slender.
Little dogs should not be treated like a fashion accessory.
A lot of little dogs nowadays are spending an entire lifetime sitting in little pink purses. And they are bored and they're out of shape and it makes them more nervous, more worried, and yeah, just not healthy for them.
How's your woodcock doing?
Oh, my darling little woodcock.
I don't know, but is this the Cleveland Clinic or was that just some chick?
Some chick who wrote the Little Dogs Activity Book.
Okay, there you go.
It had to be done.
All right. Here's Tim Riley.
Climbing into a giraffe's cage at a local zoo seemed to be a good idea after a few drinks, but the prank went also wrong when the 1.3-ton animal flew into a rage and attacked three student trespassers at a zoo in Lithuania.
A giraffe flew into a rage?
Yes.
You don't really think of giraffes as getting angry.
That's true. You think they're docile creatures who are just too far up to bother with anything.
If you picture a giraffe right now, I'll guarantee you just picture them in that weird sideways moving jaw of theirs eating some leaves. I'll guarantee you that's what you're picturing, because that's the only thing you... And do they have horns?
No, they just have ears.
I'm pretty sure they have horns and ears.
They also have those little thumpy horns.
That's what I'm saying. Horns and ears. Why do giraffes have horns?
I don't know.
For what... You don't even believe they have horns. What...
Well, I'm trying to picture a giraffe. I've seen so few.
Yeah, but I mean, if you... I'm picturing it right now. They have the ears, which are sort of flopsy and down, and then they have little
horn knobby horns.
Yeah, they have horns on top.
I'll have to look, because I have a picture of a giraffe on the wall of my office at home.
Does it say something like hang in there, or it's almost Friday?
No, it's a South African tours. It's an old poster from the early 1900s.
I think I saw that. When Scott Daly and I were there to do the podcast.
Mm-hmm. It's drinking water.
Yeah.
Then there's one next to it. It's an elephant.
All right. Now I got to figure out why giraffes have horns.
Hmm.
All right. Well, let's not worry about it just now. This email says, I was at school Friday and didn't feel like teaching. Well done, sir.
Must be a public school.
Future generations, thank you for your attention.
Is that the Cleveland High?
I didn't feel like being beaten. I was at school Friday and didn't feel like teaching, so I gave the kids a pop quiz, got out my earpiece, and plugged into Rick Emerson's show. I managed to maintain until Tim did the ocelot as the zoo mother of the year story. I had to quit listening because I was disturbing the children. Best show ever. Well, thank you.
The giraffe is one of the few animals born with horns. The baby giraffe's horns lie flat against the skull when it is born and pop upright during its first week.
But, I mean, what does a giraffe even use those horns for?
Oh, I see. Neck wrestling?
No.
That's what it says here.
Really?
Oh, they butt heads. Their skulls are strong until one of them retreats.
Giraffes butt heads with each other? Why, of the 34 years I've spent on this planet watching nature programs, I've never seen that.
Well, I suppose that they're provoked.
Interesting. Hey, this email says, Rick, Lindsay Lohan was on Letterman and Conan last week. She looked good from the nose down, but her... but her eyes were a mess and she looked like a beaten housewife in Southeast Portland.
She looks haggard.
Okay. Only in this show would that be an acceptable way to describe the way somebody looks. Let's see. What else do we have here? Well, my screen has gone all kahooey on me. All right. Here's...
Giraffes live to be 25 years in the wild. Their main predator is a lion.
Okay, here's another story about... We had that dead woman who was in Northeast Portland. They found stuff underneath a porch, and yet no one's really talking about it. How about this, Rick? The story about the woman in Northeast Portland surprised me. Remember when the Clackamas County Sheriffs were searching for the bodies of Ashley Pond and Miranda Gaddis near their Oregon City apartment? They found the corpse of a body, but later announced it wasn't the girls that they were searching for. I never even found out whose body that was. Do you recall the sheriffs ever finding out who that corpse was? No. Well, that's Tim had pointed out correctly that in certain high-crime cities in this country... Los Angeles has this policy. Mm-hmm. I know in Baltimore they have this for a while, where it was just sort of understood. There was a sort of understanding that the police department had with the press that they would not report deaths or killings in certain cities and in certain sections and sort of certain neighborhoods, because there were just so many that otherwise that's all it would be. They would just be covering them every day. So... the fact that, I mean, just based on anecdotal evidence, there does seem to be sort of a pattern of dead people turning up in Northeast Portland and not really being given the attention, that some of the other murders. I wonder if there's some sort of an understanding there about crime in Northeast Portland, the way it's reported. I don't know. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Paris Hilton's shrink says she is not capable of any meaningful participation in a civil trial brought against her by Diamond heiress Zita Graff. This is a $10 million lawsuit. Over vicious lies that were printed in the New York Post. So this is something entirely separate from her 45-day jail sentence.
Oh, now I got this Paris Hilton story here. This is from The Sun. Oh, and by the way, was it The Star magazine that said that she's terrified of rampaging gangs of lesbians? Was it The Star?
Yes, it's on the cover.
Paris is prison hell.
Yeah, Paris is prison hell. It said lesbian gangs, community showers. There were like all these other things.
It's hot. This is from The Sun. Terrified Paris Hilton is taking self-defense classes so she can protect herself from violent inmates in jail. This is a picture of her riding a bicycle. The blonde hotel heiress is trying to toughen up after receiving death threats from lags. What are lags?
I'm not sure. Is that some kind of slang?
Lags?
L-A-G-S.
Maybe they're like lads.
Gangsters?
Are lags female lads, do you suppose?
That would be a ladette.
Paris is working on a career. Is 26. Is it weird you had that she's the same age you are?
That does kind of make me in. You know what makes me feel weird is that Britney Spears is younger than me.
Oh, that is weird.
Yeah.
Hey, did you read that thing about Britney Spears being sexually assaulted somewhere?
Yes, I posted that on my blog.
Oh, I'm sorry, little miss ahead of everybody else.
Where did that happen?
Some of us are just now getting to the party.
I was thinking maybe you saw it on there, because I'm sure you frequent it.
Oh, yes, I did. That's where I saw it. No, but where was it? The Inquirer? The report of the thing about Britney Spears allegedly being sexually assaulted?
I believe so.
And that's what prompted her to shave her head? That's the rumor, is that, that she was, and this is, again, just a rumor that I believe was reported by the National Enquirer, which I'm now passing along with no verification and with absolutely no foundation, that there was some rumor that Britney was assaulted in some sort of intimate fashion by somebody she knew, and that that's what then prompted her to go all psychotic and shave her head. And first of all, let me just say that you can go to Sarah's webpage, sarahxdillon.com. And first of all,
she was sexually attacked by someone who knew her in mid-February, which prompted her to shave her head and spiral downward.
Okay, but where is that from, though? Is that from the Enquirer?
The Enquirer.
Okay, I'm going to call shenanigans on it right now. Yes. You know, if it's... Well, first of all, she...
Well, anyone dressed with a headline, they always make stuff like that up.
Well, and I was going to say...
And it's always some long-forgotten relative.
And you know, and F her either way. Because if it didn't happen, that she was assaulted, and I'm not... You know, if the story came from her camp, then... You know, because the upshot of this, and I think somebody noted this on your blog, the upshot of this, of course, is that you're not allowed to criticize anything she does, right? That's the whole thing. It's a brilliant preemptive maneuver, because then you're not allowed to criticize her because she was assaulted, which I call shenanigans on.
They should have released the story a long time ago. The damage is done.
And if she, well, and if it's true, and if it's true that she was the victim of some attempted assault by somebody she knew, then F her anyway, because she apparently didn't go to the cops about it. So... You know what I mean? And she knows who it is. If it's somebody she knew, if she knew her attacker, if she was in fact attacked, and if, as the story claims, it was by somebody she knows, then the hell with her anyway. Because, you know, if you know somebody is a sexual predator, you know, and you don't report them, then, you know, I mean, that doesn't speak very well. I mean, that's kind of, it's a little bit irresponsible either way, I would say. Tough tomatoes. That's the official word from CBS News. So, let's see. Messages on Paris Hilton's webpage include, "We're going to kill you." Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Listen to this. That's so great.
Is it ParisHilton.com?
I hope so. Inmates at the women-only Century Region Detention Facility in California include violent robbers, hookies, hookers, junkies, and a mob of butch lesbians who control by force. That is so great.
That is pretty rad.
Oh, fantastic. She's admitted to friends.
Butch lesbians who control by force.
Machete. Violent robbers, hookers, junkies, and a mob of butch lesbians who control by force. That is so great.
Where are they leaving her these threatening letters?
I don't know.
Please.
On her webpage. Messages on Paris' webpage includes, "We're going to get you," and "I'm going to kill you." So great. I don't mean to sound unsympathetic, by the way, about the Britney thing. If it happened, you know, whatever. Obviously, nobody should ever be, assaulted in that fashion. But if it happened, and if it was by somebody she knew, then it's her responsibility to turn whoever it is in. Which she clearly didn't do. So either she didn't turn the person in, which is incredibly irresponsible, and it will inevitably result in somebody else being assaulted, or this didn't happen at all, and it's just being spun as some sort of preemptive publicity diffusing technique, which, as you said, is both callow and too little too late, I might add. Let's do that. Hi, Bobby, you're in the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
How you doing today?
What's up?
Excellent. Well, I'm referring back to, you know, how you were saying that in large cities, a lot of people don't report murders and so forth and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, we're talking about these bodies, yeah.
Right. Well, I was working downtown. I was a manager at a retail store downtown a few years ago, and I received a letter from the Portland Business Bureau during the Christmas season asking us to tell our employees that if they were held up, robbed, stabbed, or murdered, not to report it because they didn't want to discourage people from the wonderful shopping situation that might
be. Really? You received this request from who?
The Portland Business Bureau, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
And so if there was, like, somebody came in and stuck a shotgun in one of your clerk's faces, you were just supposed to not tell anybody about that.
Right, we're not supposed to tell anybody or report anything to the system. And that actually, there was actually a person stabbed and killed in downtown Portland that was not reported on the news.
Really? That's interesting.
They found a dead body inside one of the smart parks.
It was
5 days after the Christmas season started, about 4 years ago.
So you've got, like, this request from the Portland Business Bureau or whatever at that time. You've got the fact that the media won't report anybody who jumps up a building, and then you've got the, you know, at least what, at least a couple bodies in northeast Portland that are either not reported or really underreported. So it does make you wonder what the reported death tally in the city every year is and what the actual death tally is.
Right. Huh. Well, you know, you do often just don't want to discourage people from moving here. It's a wonderful, beautiful, safe city, supposedly.
Of course. All right. Thank you, sir. All right, there you go. It's 503-733-2970. We got a break. We're back after this. It's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Show. We will wrap things up around the corner. Like is at 3, Don and Mike at 7. Don't go anywhere. All right, we now enter the saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. Like is at 3, Don and Mike at 7. Stephanie Miller tomorrow, 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. live. Then Dennis Miller, who had Ray Manzarek from The Doors on today. Dennis Miller tomorrow, 8 to 11. We'll be back in 20 hours. This is, let's see, hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey. I just wanted to
try again.
Katie Sackhoff is going to be the villain on Bionic Woman.
Who is Katie Sackhoff?
Play Starbuck on Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, see, and this, I'm like, that's another thing that gets me in trouble with my friends because I don't watch Battlestar Galactica and they all hate me for it. All right, is she hot?
I just want to give a quick tip out to CourtneyTapoy.com where the whole interview is. And
thanks. Yeah, thanks for that. Okay, thanks.
Bye.
There you go. All right, there you go. Couldn't bother to verify whether she's hot.
That was weird.
Just time to pimp another radio show. Thanks for that. I think they're preemptively,
I think he kind of just lost it toward the end, though, and that was the only thing that he could think of.
Pulling the ripcord. I regret nothing! Certain family to come! Join us tomorrow when our guests will be Dennis Pitzenbarger from Miles Around and from the San Diego Zoo, Joan Embry. Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970, Solid State Radio, in the newsroom, Tim Riley, the PA, Scotty J., and, of course, the gatekeeper, the one and only Dave Zinn. We want to thank CNN Radio correspondent Lisa Goddard as well. Like us at 3, Donna Mike at 7. We'll see you tomorrow at 11. As always, my friends, don't let the bastards grind you down, and please try to help the retarded. I do. You sons of bitches. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Bye.
How's your woodcock doing?
Oh, my darling little woodcock.